going on down there?
Yo, ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and I bet you weren't expecting us to be back here in the Dark of the Moon chair. My name is Vangelis, and we are here with WTF at TFW, Dark of the Moon, episode alpha of our Dark of the Moon conversations. You might remember episode one earlier this week. This is episode alpha, where I've got more people to talk about Dark of the Moon. I wanted to run a second one of these to get like a bit of a wider range of opinions so you guys could listen in on them, and I also figured that I could invite on folks who had been on the show before. So originally I wanted to get D-Fuzz on here, but he couldn't get on, and I wanted to get Lupus in on here, but Lupus is having some trouble because he's moving with his internet. And I wanted to get Protoman in on here, and Protoman actually showed up, so what's up, Protoman?
I'm good. Last minute, but... I look forward to talking about this. It's been on my mind.
Well, then I thought, like, you know, who else has been co-host on WTF? And who won a contest on WTF? And then next thing I know, Pre-Order 66 has kicked down my door and are just inhabiting my entire studio. It's crazy. So we got Crasis here. What's up?
What's up?
And we also got Empire, who has been on WTF before.
I have. Apparently we're the B-Squad, though.
Yeah.
We were like the secondary thought.
Second skimmings.
I'm so sorry. And also here is Gerodimus, who is in fact related to another podcaster in the form of Aaron. They are people who live in the same state.
And that makes us related.
Yes.
I'm strictly Y-List, folks. Strictly Y-List.
So anyway, yeah, I tried to set up one podcast, and next thing I know, a completely different podcast just broke down my door. It's great, though. They are so high-end and professional. I love it. I didn't even do any work. I just was like, can we start recording? And Crasis was like, don't worry, I got it all set up.
Yeah. Hey, beautiful. I don't have to edit this one, so I'm very happy.
Yeah. I'm going to sit here, transform some toys, and cough in the mic a whole bunch. It's not my problem. anyway, we're going to talk about Dark of the Moon again. Since I already shared a lot of my thoughts, I'm just going to be bouncing off these guys more so. But I did have one thing I didn't bring up last time I thought I'd bring up because I learned it after we recorded. And this has to do with Skids and Mudflap, the twins. They had a scene in the film that was cut out of the film, but it exists still in the graphic novel and I believe in the novelization. And it's a scene where Sentinel Prime rather brutally kills both of them. And I thought that was kind of funny. It's like Skids gets killed taking a bullet for Bumblebee, and then Mudflap goes into a rage and then gets killed after he goes after Sentinel Prime. And this is all at the hands of Sentinel Prime. And I thought it was funny that, you know, they're like, oh, we better cut the twins out of the movie. They, you know, so many people hated them. We'll just leave them out of the film. And then the scene they cut out was the twins getting horrifically killed. So guess what, guys? No matter what happens, you all got trolled. No matter what happens. So, I don't know, any thoughts on the twins? One of you guys were saying before the recording that you might be able to see some of their shrapnel still in shot. I think Empire,
yeah,
you mentioned that?
Yeah, that's what I've heard people talking about. That's how I found out about the scene. They said, like, when he's going crazy in the hangar, you can see colored limbs of, like, pieces of their body there. So, hopefully it's actually rendered, and, like, in the DVD we'll get to see it.
Oh, man. I've got to see the movie a third time now to keep an eye out for pieces of the twins. I don't know, any of the other guys got any thoughts on the inclusion and or exclusion of the twins? Crasis?
Yeah, I was actually in the store the other day and I was flipping through the graphic novel and I was surprised to see them appear. I was like, oh, wait a minute, okay. And then I read that whole scene and I think that would have been worth keeping in. It probably would have been that moment where people were like, oh god, they're the Jar Jar Binks of the last movie. Well, this would be the moment where Jar Jar Binks gets brutally slaughtered, so... Like, why didn't they keep it in? I think that would have been a good call.
Yeah, I'm also just keeping time. That was less than 5 minutes before a Star Wars reference happened.
Oh.
Good lord.
Hey up, Empire.
Jared, how about you? Got any thoughts on the twins?
Well, I unfortunately was ended up spoiled on Sentinel Prime turning bad, but I was a bit surprised that it happened as early in the film as it did.
Me too.
And I had heard that, yes, their wreckage was supposed to be in there. I didn't see it, but I didn't know exactly at what point I was supposed to be looking. But yeah, I'm one of those weirdos that liked them in Revenge of the Fallen. I mean, just because they were so ridiculously goofy, and I have to respect ridiculous.
Yeah, I never ended up really hating them just because I've always said the way I perceive them. I know this is not the popular opinion, but I grew up in a town where a whole lot of people acted like that of various ethnic backgrounds. So to me, they were lousy street rather than any kind of racial thing, at least in my perception. I understand where people are coming from on that stuff. Don't get me wrong, but it has to do with how I grew up. I think I was raised in a prejudiced West Coast British town in Canada.
No, I'm with you on that. When I was watching the movie the first time, Revenge of the Fallen, I actually just turned around and looked at the theater around me, and I'm like, yeah, pretty much this whole theater is skids and mudflap. So it didn't even register to me as like a racist or offensive thing, because I just took them as really dumb, like, kids trying to be all street and hip. And that's just, I don't know, that's how I always interpreted it, but...
Yeah, I mean, over the last 2 years, it didn't take 2 years, but it was made very clear to me where people were coming from. I was like, all right, I dig it, but I just told them, like, you gotta understand also, like, I can't really put on an offended cap at this point, because that would almost be dishonest on my part to just go like, yeah, you know what, I am offended! Because everyone told me to be! It's like, it'd be so fake. I just left it alone. Proto, what about you? The twins, how'd you feel about them?
I see it this way. If they would have kept it in, then all the like deep reading nitpickers would be like, oh, this scene represents, you know, Leonard Nimoy, the old man, keeping down the black boy or something, you know? Keeping down, you know, getting down by the man, you know, like, no, we couldn't have Jazz or some cool black bot take us. I know it's got to be the man, you know, the old guy who's been running things all this time, keeping us down. Who knows? I don't know. Me personally, those characters never bothered me from the get-go. You have to realize Transformers since day one have always been inspired by some kind of ethnic background, whether it be all the way back to G1 with Cosmos or... You know, Scatman with Jazz, that's just the way it was. It happens today, you know, now we're more of a race-sensitive culture, so everyone's looking for the next thing to complain about. Me, personally, I think it would have been better if they kept him in, not so much because, you know, to put an end to that cap, to kill the Jar Jar Binks, but just to put an end result to those two characters instead of leaving stuff very, you know, barricade obscure.
Well, I completely agree.
They were never seen since... they fought Devastator, because they that's one of the things back in Revenge of the Fallen I always said was weird, is that the twins and Wheelie and Leo all vanished while fighting Devastator, and it's kind of like, I was sitting there going, like, you can almost infer that maybe Devastator fell on them and they're dead. I don't know.
you could well, it's the same thing with, well, we'll get to that afterwards, but like with Wheelie later in the movie.
I call that the black hole of the Transformers live action films that side characters often seem to fall into. Like, even in the first movie, the Australian hacker girl, whatever her name was. She fell into a black hole off screen. Malkovich fell into a black hole in this movie. A whole lot of characters. So that was my main point I wanted to bring up. So let's start round tabling this stuff. And I got to not look at my GarageBand file, which has the other people's names on it, because I was about to call for like Gog Dog and Drew Iden to start talking. And you guys aren't them, apparently, unless I don't know something that you should be telling me now.
Now, I'm not hating on Ironhide, so I'm not Gog Dog.
Oh, yeah, he talked about that last night. Yeah, I'd miss the Twitter conversation if it happened, but yeah, he was...
I think he's going to come to my house and, like, impale me with Leader Ironhide.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with that toy. So let's start off with you, Empire. What's something from this film you'd like to bring up?
Good or bad or otherwise?
Well, whatever you like, you know, whatever you want to flow with. I the twins thing was so nice and neutral, I think we've got an open palette here.
Well, I have to say that, like, keeping with Ironhide, overall, I really liked how the movie was, but, like, no one recognized Ironhide's death. Like, not even a moment. At least Jazz, like, aw, Jazz, when they ripped him in half, but nothing. It was just like, oh well, no more Ironhide.
I like how the comparison is, like, and you see, they did it better when they just said, aw, Jazz. Like, that's a good side of it.
That wasn't much better either.
That's how you pay a tribute.
Yeah, at least they were actually acknowledging that a character died instead of, oh, he's dead. Anyway, moving on.
No one even... Prime wasn't like, hey, where's Ironhide when we went into the fight? It was just like, oh, we're fighting without him, whatever. I mean, I guess that's the way of things, though.
I guess he's gone on vacation, whatever. I'll be fine. I've got a trailer full of cool stuff.
Well, it also depends on if you're going by the movie or if you're going by the junior novelization or the comic where Ironhide's actually alive at the last panel.
What?
Oh, really?
I looked at the junior, like, illustrated one, and it's actually at the last panel. It's like Ironhide standing there next to Prime. Everyone's happy.
Hey, guys, Duke's okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
What was in that? Was that the comic as well? Because I know the comic apparently had a
whole splash
page.
No, it was one of those little like little kid books.
Okay,
the comic he isn't in the last one, but the comic does. The comic does acknowledge death, but in a different way, where it acknowledges all the characters that aren't showing up this time around. Like you see, Alita ones, like they have these like cargo coffins, if you will, mm-hmm. where they have these gigantic like cargo boxes with what is assumed to be probably the dead bodies of the dead Autobots that have passed away fighting against the Decepticons this time. And they have, like, literally, it's, like, done, like, Asian style, where you have a picture of the dead character's face in front of the cargo, and then a wreath around it. So it's almost like these little, like, I don't know, semi-funerals happened. And then what's cool about it, too, is because you see, like, Alita 1's dead, and you see Prime reaching for Alita 1's casket, if you will, almost like, you know, pay tribute to her or reach out to her. Creating that little amount of character development that might have existed, hearkening back to G1 connections that didn't exist in the movieverse. Again, I'm reading way too much into this.
Well, it was there in Foundation. I mean, I cited this a whole lot in the 4-hour, but Foundation, I think was definitely my favorite movie book of the year almost, and it did so much to help this movie. I mean, granted, I also hate it when a movie relies on a comic book to enhance it, but it did help out a lot with this movie in creating themes that, I mean, and a lot of these I'm really sure were not even intentional, but there's some cool stuff thanks to Foundation that helps the film out in the aftermath. But you know, stuff like that Alita 1 thing, even though I think she died in Rising Storm. I mean, you understand why he cares if you read Foundation. You understand why a lot of this stuff means something in Foundation, but it also means that a lot of the lack of mourning is also kind of enhanced in a negative way by Foundation, because you're like, why aren't you saying anything? You've known these guys for so long.
Which is the sad thing about it being separated from the movie. Like a lot of, and again, it's a shame that I almost feel like they don't work too well in tandem, the comic book guys with the movie producer. Like it's almost like they're done independently without any thought of what's going on one end or another. Especially when you look at all three previous film adaptations and what is different from the final product. Mm-hmm. And it's almost always the same kind of thing. It's the pace is different. Characters talk more, like robots talk more, a lot more in the comics than they do in the final product. But all in all, like death was kind of handled better in the comic version. In the movie, it's so fast pace that there's almost not a moment to grieve, if you will.
Jared, what about you? How'd you feel about Ironhide?
Yeah, I gotta agree with Empire that his death was just sort of, you know, they focused on him sort of rusting apart, and then poof, no more mention. I expected at least a nod from Optimus, considering that they were very briefly shown to be, you know, longtime associates in at least the first movie.
Yeah.
Well, according to the UK Titan, like, stuff that was done by Simon Furman, they were referred to as best friends.
Right.
I guess, again, G1 hearkening.
So, yeah, I've got to agree.
There's a whole lot in Foundation, too, to cement kind of their connection. I keep plugging Foundation. There's a good reason why. It's a good book, and it's not got Carlos Magno. So, you know, double double win.
Yes, that is very true.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's good. It's really cool. I didn't finish Rising Storm, but I bet that's a whole lot of Magno. Moving along. Krasis, what about you? Have you got a point you'd like to bring up about Dark of the Moon?
Well, I just want to say Ironhide can never get a break, man.
No. Like
that's two movies he just got brutally murdered.
Yep.
But going on that with Sentinel Prime, I was so happy to get Galvatron back on the big screen.
Pretty much, because, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
I thought it was interesting. When he first gets revived, he's there for a little while, he starts speaking, and I'm waiting for him to do some kind of crazy voice, and I'm like, oh, he's literally just being Leonard Nimoy. He's being himself. But at some point in the movie, probably around the time when he kills Ironhide, it's like his voice changes, and he starts to sound way more like G1 Galvatron.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that, like, about right at that point in the movie, there's like a click. And he starts to really, the way he starts delivering his lines all like menacingly and angrily, I'm like, wow, this is really cool. All of a sudden, Galvatron's back. So at that point in the movie, he kind of stopped being Sentinel Prime to me, and he started being Galvatron. But I was completely unspoiled. I had no idea about the switch. So when it happened, it truly was a jaw-dropping moment for me. I remember,
oh, that's
I think
great.
The theater we were in, we all just screamed out, like, what the hell? No way!
That's fantastic, because, so, I mean, that, I was telling people, that was the one spoiler I got dropped, is Sentinel turns bad and kills Ironhide, and much like, you know, has been said before, I was lucky in that I didn't know any of the context, the when, how, why, where, or you know, any of that, so it helped, but I love it hearing from folks who actually didn't know Sentinel was going to do that before the film.
Yeah, I mean, if I remember I bought the toy, and I'm like, okay, this guy, all the promo art, they showed Prime and Sentinel, like, in battle together, or standing side by side in the city, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. Sentinel's going to sacrifice himself to save Optimus. It's going to be this big heroic thing. I bought the toy as soon as it came out. I thought he was going to be some super heroic, awesome leader, and I'm like, oh,
I was in the same freaking boat. You have no idea.
I was like, that toy that I bought? You betrayed me, toy!
It's so sad, too, because I recorded a YouTube video reviewing the arc, and I put Sentinel in it like, oh, this is going to be the guy, you know? You know? And no, if you watch my video, because I have all the Autobots together on the arc, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to bring Sentinel in this, get the gang back together, you know?
And then your Ironhide toy is broken later on.
It's because I was in the same boat as you, because me, I'm so obsessed with wanting to, like, view it virginally the first time without anything spoiled. Like, I didn't know about Jazz dying in the first movie. I didn't know about any of that stuff. And going into this one, all I saw was the first trailer and then the second trailer. Even when they were trying to say what Soundwave's alt mode was, I was like, la, 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 la. I don't want to know, because I know my cars and I know I'm going to point them out in the background when I see the movie, you know? So, but when the whole Sentinel thing happened, you know, me, I went into the movie, you know, oh, I'm Proto Man. I know everything about fiction and continuity. Sentinel's not going to be a traitor. That would never happen. They're going to stick true to the G1, blah, blah, blah. And then he did the big turn and everything. And it was the same thing to me. It was the big, like, holy, you know, yelling out loud at the screen moment where, like, I did not expect that at all. Completely. Big twist. I think that's what really, adds to why I liked the movie so much, was something that was just completely unexpected.
Yeah, definitely. Completely agree. I feel like there are a lot of moments where I just kind of, like, yelled at the screen too, just from one thing or another.
I think it helps a lot too that, and we said this on WTF normal cruise, that it's great how we didn't get as inundated with spoilers as we did with Revenge of the Fallen, when we, like, knew the entire film a week before the film came out.
Leaked and scripts like crazy.
Leaked scripts, children's books, novelizations, comics, everything, just, like, getting inundated with what the whole film is before you see it. This time there were twists that kind of helped. I don't know. Any of you other guys, how do you feel about Sentinel Prime? I don't know why I keep wanting to pick on Jared. Hey, Jared, how do you feel about Sentinel Prime?
Well, I gotta say that at least for a Michael Bay film, there were two sort of literary complexities used that sort of set that up, and it was really nice, actually. There was the scene early on where Brains and Wheelie are watching the Star Trek episode with Spock, and they say, oh, this is the episode where Spock goes crazy.
Yeah.
And that was a nifty little bit of foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. And then when they reactivated Sentinel, He goes nuts there for a second and attacks Optimus, and then they calm him down and it's okay, and you think, oh, shoo, it's okay, he's a good guy. So that's sort of the reverse psychology thing. That, oh, no, it's okay, he's all right, he's good, and then they go and reverse it again on you. I thought that was really pretty well done.
It almost adds a layer, too, of character development, because it's almost like Prime saw him and maybe Sentinel right away said, oh, the jig is up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that could be, too. That's an excellent point, yeah.
You know, where he probably, like, that was probably his first gut reaction. Oh, man, the Autobots, you know, figured me out. I got to take him out. And then maybe Prime calmed him down. He's like, oh, maybe they don't know. You know, like, who knows? Like,
yeah, that's great. I didn't think of it that way.
Well, when I left the theater, like, right away, I have, like, my two fingers, like, you know, up against my lip. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, how did this, you know? It's like Fight Club, where you got to go back and watch it again.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And then experience everything differently, knowing what you know now, you know? And
I just want to throw out, I bet you that between comparing it to Fight Club and bringing up literary contentions, a whole bunch of people have probably just thrown their iPhones at the wall already at this point.
Like, that's what we're aiming for.
That's right. Throw those phones, baby.
The droids
throw
last, phones. Though. The droids are fine.
Yeah, droid can take an Android, baby. That's, I say, owning an iPhone and recording this on a Macintosh. Whoops. Any other thoughts on Sentinel Prime anyone wants to drop out there? I mean, he's a big topic.
I did have one question, though. I was wondering, there's that scene where him and Prime are standing there heroically in the horizon, and Prime actually kneels and offers him the Matrix, and he's like, no, you keep it.
Yeah, why didn't he take it? I mean, like, maybe he couldn't use it, but it's like, Prime has an object that can reignite sparks. Maybe it would be advantageous to take that away from him when I am already totally planning to flip out and give his planet to Megatron and then push Megatron around. Like, I'm crazy.
Maybe he was just trying to keep his ruse up. Like, maybe he wasn't sure when it was the perfect time to do whatever, so he needed to keep himself in check.
Yeah.
But he was alone with Optimus. That would have been a perfect time to just kind of go like, by the way, Optimus, kneecap. I need you to stay here.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, it's not only that, too, and especially, like, there's these huge theories where, like, you know, like, people – there's some people that are trying to, like, attach all three movies together, including, you know, the Fallen's plan with the Sun Harvester and everything.
I like that thread.
If Sentinel was truly part of that big, you know, domino effect of things, then I think he would have really wanted that Matrix just in case if a Sun Harvester would be needed to be activated again.
Yeah.
You know, like, if that's the only key – bro, take it, man. Why are you giving it back? You know, this guy's crazy. He shot Devastator in the Demolisher in the face, like, you know, cold blooded. You got to get it from him now, otherwise you're not going to get your chance later.
Yeah, that seems really stuck with me, especially on my second viewing when I watched it. And I was kind of like, you know, I feel like there's always a certain level with a film where I'm kind of like, I don't like when I get to the point where I'm doing so much legwork behind the scenes of the film itself on my own to make sense of it. I'm kind of like, at this point, I think maybe this is just a weakness that really needed to be covered up a bit better. Because, I mean, even the comic books, having read Foundation, I don't know how to take that that scene.
I almost want to say the scene might have been there to kind of help make the viewer think, oh, he is a really good guy, and then make switch even worse. Like, oh my God, look what he just did.
But it also
really
makes you go back and
solidify that there's, I guess, like you're saying, to really solidify that there isn't something suspicious about this character. It's like, oh, he rejected the Matrix. He's got to be, you know, honorable and great like we all thought he was going to be this entire movie. And, I guess not.
Well, it's one of those things that it works really well on the first viewing, but then the moment you go back and you start looking at it, you kind of go like, oh, man, wait a second. Why isn't he, like, now that I know he's crazy, why isn't he, you know, stroking his beard and just, like, crushing the Matrix and going like, bah, we don't need this anymore.
I mean, if you're going to this movie for a good complex plot with no holes, then, I mean, you've got other issues, I think.
Not to mention it's Spock with facial hair again.
I've got all kinds of issues. I was sitting there just getting furiously aroused by that facial hair animation. It was so well done.
So you know right away that he's got to be evil.
I was upset.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
No, there you go.
That was mirror stuff going on.
There's every, like, Star Trek fan is just like, this is so predictable. He's so good to, like, turn on them. And all the trans fans are like, what are you talking about, Trekkie? Get out of here,
I want to actually ask you guys about something, because I thought it was great. I know a bunch of people thought it was great when Sentinel Prime totally just drops a Spock line about needs of the many. But I know some people who got furiously angry about that. And I was wondering if any of you guys got mad about it, so I could ask you.
Honestly, the opening viewing of, like, the first viewing of the movie, when I saw the advanced screening, there was a loud groan from the audience. but again, the opening viewing, like, this the advanced viewing is a lot of critics and people who won, like, radio contests.
Well, I saw one of those viewings as well, and everyone was into that line more than my general public view. In Vancouver, people loved it. The critics in Vancouver were like, ha ha, it's awesome.
Everyone was just like, oh, really?
It's because you're in Quebec or something. I don't know. Like,
I don't know, maybe.
I was sitting next to my friend who was a big Trekkie, and he was like, damn you, Spock, when he said that.
Did you go like,
at least you guys had other people reacting. I was the only one in my theater who had any kind of audible reaction, I swear.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, ha! Oh my god! And I look around, and everybody's just sitting there. I'm like, what? Seriously?
Come on, guys! Wrath of Khan? Really?
Hello?
Really?
And they're all like, yeah, I know. We know it's Wrath of Khan. That wasn't cool.
Uncultured swine.
And these were the same people that were laughing for 5 minutes at anything Dutch or Malkovich's character said.
Oh, they didn't. And they didn't touch the Wrath of Khan line?
Not a peep!
They know who Leonard Nimoy is?
I don't know. There were a lot of young-looking people there. But, I mean, come on. It's Spock. Surely.
I was curious if any of you guys were offended by it, but clearly not at this point.
Oh, no, I liked the twist on it. It was the same line, but delivered in a very different situation. So
absolutely,
I thought that was great.
Yeah, I totally dug that. I was like, that is the kind of cheese I like. That's like, you know, hardcore self aware meta cheese, but that is still really good on pizza. You know.
It's not only that. What I like about it is because it's kind of the same way with like what's happening now with Gog Dog with Ironhide. But like prior to seeing the movie, looking at Sentinel Prime toys, picking up the Sentinel Prime toys, heroic guy. Now I look at the Voyager when I'm standing in the toy aisle and I'm like, freaking traitor. Yeah? Like you have a completely different emotional connection now with even the character when you look at him in the toy aisle. There's so much more. Like that's what I appreciate from the movie so much is how it took me on that ride.
Yeah. It made me want the character more now because he's more complex than just a standard.
Oh yeah, then
toting the good guy line.
Oh yeah. Hey, what's the thing with the Voyager that's a spoiler? PL alluded to something.
Gog Dog told me about that in our last Dark of the Moon thing. Basically, his Autobot symbols are scratched out like the leader Jetfire's Decepticon symbols were scratched out.
Oh, really?
I didn't even notice.
I get it.
I watched the whole video looking for it, and I didn't even notice it, but apparently it's there. Back when all I knew is Sentinel Prime shoots Ironhide, and PL said there's a spoiler on the toy, I was like, oh man, I bet you like his head transforms into Shockwave's head or something. Like, he's actually Shockwave. And I was totally wrong, but...
I think I was hiding under a rock, too, because I didn't realize there's a Cyberverse repaint of him called Dark Sentinel that's coming out.
That's recent.
Yeah, and
that's
it's like
recent.
Half a shade dark.
The funny thing about that, though, is that prior to even that being announced, that's what I thought was weird, too, was you had, you know those RPM speed stars that come with a figure?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, they have one with Sentinel in his traditional colors, and in the exact same wave, there's one with him in black.
Yeah,
and I was
really?
Like, what is this, like a stealth Sentinel? They already, and only now do I kind of go, oh, okay, I guess
this Dark Sentinel Prime Cyberverse toy, though, it's just Sentinel Prime with a black abdomen instead of a red abdomen or something like that. Like, it's
He's
really
got a couple
minor
purple bits on his shoulders.
He's got, like, purple metallic paint, I thought, too.
I really wish that his repaint was from the trailer where he was done up all gold instead of red.
Yeah!
That'd be a cool repaint. But... I'm not in charge
of repaints. That's actually more of a homage to the Marvel Sentinel.
Yeah, or some Vector Prime action going on as well.
Or that too.
There's some gold in there. Sentinel Prime is easily one of the best topics to talk about in this movie. Because also, he had lines. He is a movie villain who had lines, which is kind of unique in this franchise. Because, the Fallen barely really got to say much. In the first movie, Megatron didn't really get to say much. And so Sentinel Prime is like a lead movie villain who also had tons of screen time. And I think that was a big thing. I don't know about you guys. But...
Hell, he's a robot that had a personality. And
yeah,
had
that too. A robot with lines and a moving mouth and acting. Like,
yeah.
this kind of is a backhanded compliment to give to the movie. But nonetheless, you know, I got to tell the truth. It's a big help.
You know what it was? I think it's also because of the star power behind it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it was like, well, we got Nimoy. We better, we better give him his lines.
Use the damn Nimoy.
Well, they don't use the voice actor who did Megatron. I mean,
Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving. Yeah, Hugo? That's a pretty big actor.
Hugo got a bit in the first movie.
A little bit, but...
But he was frozen half of it anyway.
Exactly. So. compare his screen time in the movie where he was the big bad to Sentinel in the movie where he's the big bad, and it's like, boom. Like, Sentinel, I think, was I wish that, you know, in hindsight, I wish Sentinel was indicative of the villains in all three movies, like the lead villains in all three movies, in how much screen time they would get. So you feel like, you know, they're fighting a real enemy rather than a monster robot who shows up. Yeah, yeah. Like, or even less than that, just a monster robot who says one or two things. Also, this also answers the question when people are like, why are they only doing Autobots as leader toys in Dark of the Moon? It's like, guess what? One of them ain't an Autobot. Boom. Another swerve. I forgot who brought that up. That was Krasis, right? I'm keeping a list going.
Oh, yeah.
All right, I'm going to keep my list going then. Let's move along to Gerotimus. What's the part of the movie you'd like to bring up?
I would like to say that I completely loved how Starscream was. He was outstanding, especially in that scene where he's tormenting Sam and Carly.
Mm-hmm.
He was great.
And he had lines.
He had lines, and they were very well done. Charlie Adler totally killed it.
I was so kind of bummed that this might be the last we hear of Charlie Adler, because it felt like he was finally getting to really become Starscream. After, like,
oh yeah, that bit where he talks about their little insect legs running away and does the little finger thing. That was great!
Yeah, I feel so bad for him, because, I mean, I don't remember. I think he was Starscream in the Revenge of the Fallen game, so I think he's gotten some video game screen time as well. But Charlie Adler was definitely a talent that I think only now really got utilized to his fullest.
He had some lines in Revenge of the Fallen.
He did, but I don't know.
He had the groveling lines.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
At the top of the building.
But it was much better than, like, every movie, I think they got Starscream a little better.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Because in the first movie, he only had that one scene, and it was like this glimpse of what could come. In the second movie, he had a few scenes, but I still wish he'd had more. And in this movie, it just felt like, I still wish he had even more in this movie, but they really did let loose a bit more with him and kind of go like, all right, Charlie Adler, we're going to finally really unleash the talent that you are, and go ahead.
Yeah, I really like the way he does his voice. It works.
Well, he used to be the Crypt Keeper.
So oh.
Is that right?
I did not know that.
That's awesome.
Well then, that changes everything.
That's right. He's going to rise from the dead and tell us weird, dark comedy Transformers stories. I was always a big proponent of Charlie Adler being Starscream, so I'm big on that. Any other thoughts on Starscream from you guys? Dive in.
I know there was a scene in the book or something that where Starscream was supposed to fight Mirage or Dino or whatever and kill him. I wish that was in the movie. It would have been nice to see him do a little more.
That's actually in the comic book version. Dino actually dies instead of Q.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember it exactly. It's like on the other side of the house right now, the comic. But to my knowledge, I think it was a lot more like simple too. Like one of the crankcase just like swung his arm and killed him. Like in the same scene though, what it should have been Q, and you just see Dino fall over. His head's now gone.
Of course,
kind of sucks.
Heads always have to fall off. That's how you know a Transformer's dead in this movie, which is a big problem I had with it that I ranted about for a while already.
Andy's Wheeljack also. Yeah, anyway, Mirage, but yeah, that's another story.
Yeah, but I agree with Empire. That would have been a cool scene for Starscream to give him a little something more to do than just fight Sam and Lennox there.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta say, a lot of people were really, really bitching about how a Transformer could be taken out by a bunch of humans. And I actually thought that was an awesome death. I was totally on board with that.
On one hand, it's
Starscream, but... Yeah.
It's been done in the past, so, I mean, for them to rage about it now, I mean, yeah, a lot of people hate on Kicker, but he killed a lot of Transformers. A lot of people, you know, a lot of people haven't seen Master Force, but, yeah, a lot of Transformers died in Master Force at the hands of humans, so.
Well, if you want to draw a direct comparison, that was a parallel to the Blackout death in the first movie, and it was done way better, because Blackout, he got taken out way too... Blackout was just like, what's up, I'm the helicopter, oh god, you know my weak spot, and he got shot in the crotch, and he just falls over and dies. And then, like, Starscream had
fall over if you got shot in the crotch?
No, I'm from Canada. We can take that kind of stuff. Proto will back me up on that. Starscream had an actual process to his... there was an actual arc to that little scene, and there was a beginning and an end, there was a climax, and you know, aside from his last line, I was way into it. His last line, I wish, had been delivered a bit differently, but... You know, that's just me getting really picky on my super robot voicing.
Which line was that?
Well, he ends by starting to say, you puny. And he said it kind of like, you puny! And his head goes up. And I wish he had been more like, you puny! And then, like, add a bit more of a sort of cheesy drama to it.
Final end.
He didn't know he was dying.
But you know, from the writer perspective, where you know you have that omniscience, I just kind of wish that there had been a bit more of like something. I don't want to say more animu or anime style, but you know, just something with a little bit more of a climax to it than like it.
No, it's okay. I support that. That's how I would have wanted it too.
I don't know. Like the same line, just delivered a little bit differently. And I think this really comes down to a lot of the robot acting. You know, was done offset and. This calls for a level of synchronicity that perhaps was not feasible for the production. But
yeah, but I did love my eye, my eye.
Oh yeah. Ah! Yes. Oh, and the big debate. Now I am in the camp of thinking Starscream said, "I will kick you." But do any of you guys think he said something else?
I did not. I'd have to watch
there's
it
a, there's
yeah,
a, the massive threat.
All I can hear is my eye and I can't see.
There's a massive threat about this, because there's a part where he says, I will kick you! And then he actually goes to try to kick Sam and he misses. And, I mean, I thought that was kind of silly, but then some people were kind of going like, no, he didn't say kick, he said kill, or he said get. And I saw the movie twice, he totally said kick. I was just wondering if anyone else had heard that line, or...
I saw it twice, but I didn't really look out for that, so I can't really say.
It's the part where he tries to kick Sam and says he'll kick him. Watch out for it. On Blu-ray later this year.
Post it in the forum.
That's right, screen caps. All right, let's move down the list. Proto, you got a point about the movie you'd like to bring up.
I think, and people are going to probably hate me for this, but dare I say, Michael Bay was really smart with how he marketed this. I think I really like how it was like all Shockwave, Shockwave. Oh, it's Shockwave. And then in the interviews, yeah, Shockwave is so, you know, amazing. He's so bad. He's so evil.
And then,
you know, again, all of us fans just thinking of Marvel comic books going, oh, it's that Shockwave. We're going to get that shock. He's going to show up and go, Megatron, what are you doing wrong? You know, like, I'm taking over. We're all playing it out in our heads. And Bay is stringing us along with all the Shockwave footage and how it just completely 180'd on us. You know?
Yeah.
Just completely, just like, it's not Shockwave. If anything, because that's the only thing I was a little bit spoiled was because I played the DS game. For Autobots just before seeing the movie, and Shockwave was kind of like working with Megatron already, so I was like, oh, okay, so maybe it's something else. But it's just, I remember how the movie just, it was just like, and I remember even talking to people before the movie coming out and going like, yeah, Shockwave's going to be a big deal, you know, and like we see all the toys at BotCon and we're like, oh, there's the Voyager and there's that base there. Oh my God, he attaches to that Cyberverse base. Oh, he's going to be crazy in this movie. And No, not at all.
Well, which do you even really think he knew really what Shockwave was?
Oh, Bay, of course not.
Bay, no. Yeah.
If you go back and look at everything that Bay said about the movie, it's the same thing like he was with Revenge of the Fallen. Everything he said has to be taken with a grain of salt. Like everything he said about Sentinel Prime was, oh, he's great. He's great. He's so bold and strong and noble. And now you look and you're like, wow, Bay, what? You know, Bay was stringing us along. He didn't know what he's talking about. Take your pick, you know, but
well,
it's
I
just...
appreciate him not going, oh, he turns. Isn't that great?
Well, obviously, yeah, that would be the worst thing, but it's just, I find it's kind of clever how they did that with the marketing where it was like, it was where we all thought this was the villain, you know, because Megatron was very absent from the, again, I only saw the first two trailers. I really avoided all the other ones, but Megatron was very absent from the other trailers. And it was all Shockwave, Shockwave. And every time we talked about him online, oh, new footage of Shockwave, that same one scene where it's like, walks, cocks his gun, you know, like, but just, oh, we have like half a millisecond more of footage of that. And it's just, we all thought this, it's going to be a big thing. And then, you know, it ended up just being like, oh, it's Sentinel's the Shockwave character. And again, going to Vangelis' thing where Piaw's video had a spoiler in it. And I was like, oh my God, are they going to try to do the animated thing where
exactly.
Maybe Sentinel is Shockwave? But then again, by then I was like, nah, that's not happening. That's crazy to even think that. You know, Sentinel's a good character and stuff, but it was the same thing. Also, it was the same thing with Wheelie. Wheelie's toy was also the same thing where it had that faction switch thing and everyone was going, well, what's that? You know?
I was saying in our last podcast that, you know, how everyone was making fun of Bay for his attempted misinformation campaign of like, Megatron's not an ROTF at all. And everyone's making fun of him so much after that. This was his revenge. A successful misinformation campaign.
This was him like saying like, I got you this time.
And he did. No, I'm completely on board with you. If that Amazon comic scene leak hadn't happened, I am really sure that would have been a massive twist for a majority of the audience who went to see that. I'm talking about the nerd audience who went to see that. Because a lot of people don't bother with novelizations, but it's because of that Amazon comic leak that twist got spread so much farther than it would have otherwise. I think that kind
not
of
for, not for
bit.
Me though. I honestly didn't know.
Yeah, I tried either. So hard to stay away from it.
I avoided everything.
I tried anytime, so hard,
especially leading up to the movie's debut. And it was the same thing with Revenge of the Fallen. Leading up to the movie, like TFW gets like a million different versions of mini trailers and TV spots.
Yeah.
And I avoided every single one of those. Cause I know like, to me, the mentality is the more of these trailers I see, the more new footage that is not new to me.
The more money shots that get blown too.
Yeah, exactly. The more stuff that is meant to sell the movie. Like, I mean, how many times could you watch, you know, Bone Crusher go through a bus?
Yeah.
You know, but
I have to say this movie had a lot of money shots though, even for everything that was in the trailers.
This whole movie is action. But I love that marketing twist that they did this time around.
Mm-hmm.
It was smart. If not intentional, then still great. I don't know.
I was really pleased with it. And I want to also throw out there, there's one, I mean, we kind of made fun of some, you know, we criticized the movie and we criticized some critics, in the last one. There's one point I didn't cover last time, which is you encounter the people who, especially with these movies and their reputation, who say, well, I'm not really spoiling you because you can't spoil a plotless movie. I just want to say, no, screw you. You can spoil anything. And if you're going to spoil it, then just own up and say you're spoiling it. Don't try to give me this bull crap of, no, it's a crappy movie, so I'm really saving you the trouble. It's my choice to make, son. I don't know where that aggro came from, but
agree with that aggro, though.
We've gone about 40 minutes, and we haven't actually attacked anyone directly, so I wanted to just throw that one in there and, you know, dust my hands off a little bit. I'll drop another topic we could talk about. I'll start becoming a negative Nancy, because we got to have one of those around here. So there was something else. I don't remember if we talked about it much last time, but there was in the 45 plus minutes of action that ended the film, which I rather enjoyed. And, you know, I know actually quite a few folks who got a little bit bored of it or at least tired of it by the end of it. There was one moment in there, aside from the human squirrel scene, which I thought went a little bit long, where I actually did kind of start chuckling and not really in the way the movie would have liked, which is the third time everyone started falling through the building. Because they all fell through the building, and then they fell out of the building.
It's at a different angle now.
And then they fell through the building, and they're like, all right, everything's okay. And then the worm tips the building, and they all start falling through the building again. And it almost even felt like parody, because the final time they start falling through the building, the camera just pulls out through one of the windows as they're all falling, and it's getting farther away. And I was kind of like, are you just making fun of the fact that they're going to spend the next 20 minutes falling back and forth through this building?
I think the engineer who made that building should get an award for that thing just not collapsing in.
Never,
itself.
Yeah.
That's really what I thought.
Yeah.
You've got the worm squishing it and ripping it apart, and it's still there.
That was one of those times where I kind of went like, you know what, in the script edit, I would have said, hey guys, let's bullet point this for a second. We're doing the same thing basically three times in a row. Maybe we should trim this slightly or fill the building with spikes or something the third time. I don't know. And I felt horrible for that one, the one merc who ended up falling out of the building.
Who didn't make it?
You know, just kept falling all the way out?
Yeah, on the third time he falls through the window and, you know, everyone else happened to fall into a piece of debris, and that poor guy just... Like, you know, he got Wilhelm screamed a little bit, but I wish he just had some some line falling out of, like, you know, this is bullshit!
He got a good look at Shockwave before he went out.
That's true. I did like that moment of Shockwave, like, turning around and go, like, why are chairs and people falling down from the sky above me?
Super slow-mo?
Yeah, why is everything slowing down all of a sudden? This keeps happening ever since I came to Earth. So strange. But I don't know, like, did you guys feel at any point there was an action scene that perhaps could have been trimmed back a little bit? I mean, I've also made thoughts of my own known about the flight suit scene seeming to go on a bit long because it was an expensive scene to do. But I don't know about you guys. Any scenes you think could have been trimmed back a bit?
I think the movie was trimmed quite a bit in general. It just seems like some of the cuts were cut really quick to try to fill in all this stuff. Mm. The only thing that I thought would have been helped to get cut was Prime getting tangled up by that wire. It just so stupid.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, yeah, Optimus exactly. Prime, like, you remember those things in your arms you used to massacre people?
Yeah. Well, it was like, hey, we need the wreckers to do something because, you know, they just were cars the whole time. So,
still, I was just sitting there going, like, you know, Prime, is when he gets real mad, he just starts forgetting stuff. And he's like, I can't get out!
He goes into, like, a berserker rage, like Wolverine, and just eyes blood red and wanting to kill things.
Considering the wreckers had to climb up there manually, I imagine the long conversation of them going, like, Prime, you got a knife? And he's like, I don't got any kind of knife! I'm stuck! And they're like, but can, you know, those blades, no knife! Get me down! You know, like, just flipping out. I can't feel my legs!
Let's see. He's got a sword. He's got hooks. He's got
axes.
Axes.
He's got teeth. Even, you know, he's
It's like those cables. How much could they really suspend? How heavy do you think Optimus Prime with a full trailer is?
With his trailer, yeah.
Those cables were part of the construction of that building that the worm was squeezing.
Well,
so.
There you go. That engineer, just like Chicago, there you go.
If the wreckers weren't there, all that the Decepticons need to do was just set up a bunch of those cables around town. Because, you know, Optimus Prime has got this weird thing where he's like, no, I got it.
Wires everywhere.
I got a million weapons. I need my flight tick because it's badass. And they're like, all right, we know the Prime's nuts. And he's going to want to start flying around all over the place. So we'll just put up some trip wires everywhere. And eventually he'll just, you know, cut his own head off flying through one of them. And we'll be all set to go.
Needed some Tholians.
Yeah.
For you Star Trek nerds out there.
Like, they should have cut that and then put how the Autobots got captured, and I think it would have been better.
That was the biggest thing from that sequence that also kind of stuck with me after a while that I also forgot to bring up last time, is Bumblebee saves somebody, and then within about 5 minutes is captured off screen. And it's kind of like, how did he get from there to there? And like, I imagine, you know, how it could happen is, you know, he runs out to distract the Decepticons so the humans can get away that he just saved, and he can go like, no, I surrender, it's all cool. But it was also a very strange jump cut, bro. And I originally even thought it was one of the wreckers that was captured, and I was like, but aren't they, are they like the Constructicons again? Like, are there just a million wreckers who all look the same, or what's going on? But it was Q that I was thinking of. Any other action scenes that you thought might have gone on a bit longer? Shall we swap topics again? Swap as fast as an edit cut in this film.
I agree with the squirrel one, but I think Bay, again, he was really proud of that scene. I mean, he showed it to us at BotCon. He's like, look at this scene.
It's the military glory. That's what he loves.
And, it was done a lot of it was done in practical, as I understand it. So, you know, like I said in the last episode, I think that's part of why it was going on for so long, is it was such an expensive scene to do. You got to get your money's worth out of the footage.
I'll say this was the best G.I. Joe movie I ever saw.
Hell yeah!
Well, The Rock is training your second one, so you ain't got to worry.
Oh, no.
I'm pumped for that. I don't know what you guys are knowing about. Jeez.
You don't like The Rock? What the hell?
Yo. Man, you get the guy over there who doesn't like The Rock. What's your name?
No, I'm just saying, this is the second time.
It doesn't matter what's your name!
See what he did there?
This is two podcasts now where Empire tripped me up with throwing out The Rock at me.
I will say this was a very good G.I. Joe film. I think it was even better than the G.I. Joe movie that was called G.I. Joe. although I didn't hate that movie all that much.
Could have been Cobra Commander.
It did needed some Cobra Commander. That's who should have popped out of the snake, I think. Joseph Gordon-Levitt in a mask. All right, let's pass the mic around again. Then Empire, you got another point you'd like to bring up?
Okay. Here, just the fact that I think all the rumors about the Wreckers not transforming originally is kind of true, because there's no scene where you see their transformation sequence, and all the robot stuff they did was kind of just like background, or, you know, like an added scene here or there. They weren't really a part of anything that happened.
Or horrifically tearing a Decepticon infant limb from limb and keeping it alive as long as possible, because they are
really
screwed
really
up.
Hardcore of them. But, and the dog wasn't even in it. I thought we were going to get to see that dog.
That was a shame. Although, you know, I think between that dog and the cut scene of the elephant getting shot in the face, both those scenes probably would have set PETA off like nothing else.
Oh, the elephant scene should have been in the movie.
Yeah, it should have been in the movie. Awesome. Yeah. I'm all for the elephant scene. Did you feel at some point that the Wreckers kind of felt like the only Autobots who were really in line with Optimus Prime's mode of thinking?
Exactly.
Yeah, as they just walk up and rip apart some guy? Yeah. I mean,
like you kind of have this feeling that it wasn't Optimus Prime's vote to keep them cooped up with that rocket ship, that it was more the other Autobots going like, if we have these guys hanging around.
Yeah, I need these ruthless killers on the street. It's like, did you ever see Demolition Man when Wesley Snipes wants all those cold killers out?
Yeah.
That's what they were.
I just imagine it was the rest of the Autobots going like, you know, we can deal with one. We got four running around. Stuff's going to get hard to deal with here, especially with one of them being in charge.
I don't know. This movie made me want to be a Leadfoot completionist.
It did. Leadfoot had, and I think he was John DiMaggio, wasn't he?
Was he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Wow.
John DiMaggio finally getting a full-on main character role on the big screen.
Character.
I mean,
well, say like five things.
Yeah, for
come on,
for
man, he had belly jiggle.
He had waggle belly. Awesome. Come on,
for
man.
A Transformers live action film, that is main character material to have like five.
Not
lines.
To mention, Leadfoot looks a little bit like him too.
Yeah,
for anyone who knows what he looks like, he kind of has that same look to him.
But I mean, John DiMaggio has played a whole lot of Transformer voices, but like in video games and whatnot. But I kind of was happy for him that he finally got like a big noticeable role on the big screen as a Transformer for all the work he's done in the games and stuff like that. I was kind of happy.
Are the Wreckers in the game?
I'm not sure about the Dark of the Moon game, but DiMaggio I think played a couple voices in the Revenge of the Fallen game. He was some of the and he was in I think he was in War for Cybertron as well. Primarily bit roles. I think he played Sideways in Revenge of the Fallen, but I don't have the credits handy because you know that's way too hard to look stuff up during the podcast.
I mean,
yeah,
he was
Sideways.
I'm a genius.
He was Sideways. He was for the DS version and for the consoles.
So I'm really trying to pressure Americans going to TFCon to try to track me down some Leadfoot toys because we don't have Targets up here. So I think Leadfoot's never going to come to Canada at this point.
So you guys don't have the Target repaint.
Well, no. we have the Cyberverse non-Target logo version.
Yeah, and that one I think actually looks a bit better on the Cyberverse level because it has more silver paint and
just the paint apps. But
yeah, the Target one has a Target logo, but it's not in the right place.
Yeah,
it's on his roof. It's not proudly on his belly.
Well, part of it's on his belly, like a little tiny bit of it. Mm. It gets kind of cut in half.
Oh, you can't desecrate the Target logo like that. That's a long-standing, proud company, Target. I don't know anything about Target. I had a nose.
Target.
I had a nosebleed in Target at BotCon. That was weird. Some of my blood ended up on the floor in Target.
So you're one with Target now?
Yes. I left my mark in Target.
There's my center.
I left the Target
on
the floor.
You should have stuck your finger in your nose and just drew a circle.
Openly bleeding everywhere, just walking up to one of the walls. Target, am one of us! Tracing on the... This is a weird conversation.
Anyways, that's sick.
Yeah, let's move away from that. Any other thoughts on the Wreckers? I guess we could, just going off of what Empire brought up, we could briefly just talk about them. I was kind of bummed that Topspin didn't say anything. He just kind of walked around in the background a whole lot.
Yeah, and I was surprised at the voices they chose for them, because I guess the way they were designed, they looked to me like they were going to be very stereotypical, like, redneck kind of things. The way you
NASCAR
got the
fans.
Yeah.
You got swerved.
Yeah, you got the big beer belly, you got the guy with the mullet, you got the other guy who looks like he's wearing a ball cap, and then, no, not at all.
They're Scottish and European NASCAR fans.
To quote, I think it was Sulfur, they were like soccer hooligans, almost.
Yeah.
It was more like they were that, you know, like they were more focused on, like, you know, just causing trouble and being rowdy, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I thought there was really more explanation to them.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. They were really entertaining, but... Why are they NASCARs? They never go into that. You never see them as clean NASCARs. They're always fully ready to, you know, all the guns are deployed and everything.
Stealth Force engage.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. That was kind of weird. Have any of you guys read, like, the novels or the comics? Is that ever explained?
The comic version doesn't touch any of that.
Okay.
I figure that whoever asks them why they're NASCARs ends up like the Decepticon infant they ripped apart. I only say Decepticon infant because it's the hatchling model, and it entertains me, the idea that those hatchlings that get so viciously butchered in the films are actually Decepticon infants. I have a twisted outlook on these films, I admit, but I don't know. And Roadbuster had some lines. He actually got to say some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, good on Roadbuster. Anyone else have any thoughts on the Wreckers, or shall we push along? Well, then I guess we'll push along. Okay. Hey, Crasis, what do you want to talk about?
Ooh. I will say this, though, from just a technical standpoint, just a pure visual standpoint, I will say this is the best 3D movie I've ever seen.
Boom.
And I might go so far as to say it's the best 3D movie made. Now, I'm not saying it's the best film ever made, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying from just a visual, technical standpoint, the 3D blew my mind. And we saw it, Empire and I saw it, in a massive IMAX screen. It wasn't a LIMAX. It was a true huge IMAX screen where the robots were just about like life size.
Did you see a LIMAX?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of theaters that claim to be IMAX, and really they're just a slightly bigger screen. So
I gotta remember that. Sorry, I gotta remember that term. I had to.
Yeah,
to
you can check on Google Maps. They'll actually like there's they'll you can check to see if theaters are LIMAX or true IMAX.
Wow.
So, but so I drove way too far. I paid $18 to see this
way
movie.
Way too far. Screw you.
Man, all right, you make that drive every day, but that's 45 minutes for me just to go pay $18 to see an IMAX movie in 3D. But I gotta say, I think the only way to see this movie is 3D. I don't know if I'd want to see it in 2D.
Well, I'll throw out there my approach on this, because I know people who can't do 3D, so I always say, like, you know, if you can't see 3D, of course, you're not going to agree with anything we're saying about the 3D, but as someone who does actually enjoy good 3D in the context of current 3D technology, not in the, you know, the opinion side of is this even worth it, this was, I think, also the best 3D film I've seen, having seen the other two top-tier ones, Avatar and How to Train Your Dragon. Mm-hmm. I don't remember How to Train Your Dragon all that well, so I don't know if this one trumps that, but I could say for certain that I felt this was better than Avatar.
Wow, you don't remember How to Train Your Dragon? All the flying scenes were in 3D?
Well, the flying scenes I remember, but I can't remember all the rest of it. I don't want to just crutch on... I mean, the flying scenes were awesome. They gave me vertigo at one point. It was great.
Yeah, and immediately, well done movie.
Immediately, all the people who don't like 3D are like, you're saying, great, I had vertigo. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, because I was sitting in a chair the whole time.
Yeah.
That's the safest way to have vertigo.
I think one thing that helped me, too, with there was a difference between seeing this in real 3D versus IMAX 3D. Because the theater we went to, the IMAX 3D, these things are like goggles that you put on. They're not just those normal glasses on top of your glasses. I wear glasses, so glasses on top of glasses, it starts to hurt after a while. But these things, did they just kind of like wrap around your head a little bit and they just fit? And they were giant goggle type things.
They were like party fun sunglasses,
yeah,
like
you know
the
what
triple
it was?
The size.
It was like Elton John sunglasses, that sort of thing. They were massive.
Were they sparkly?
So it was kind of cool that they don't get in the way of your eyeglasses if you wear glasses.
Oh, I wish so I could see it like that. That'd be cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Well, you come on over. We'll watch a movie together.
All right, I'll head over there. Okay, fine. I got 20 minutes, right? We're all good. yeah, I mean, Gog saw it, I think, in 3D and 2D. He said in 2D it was fine as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw it in both. I prefer the 3D, I must say, though.
Oh. Jared, what about you? Are you able to do 3D, or have you got the...
Aaron and I did 3D in a regular theater for our one and only showing so far. I'm going to try to go see it. Probably, I'm going to go see it in 2D tomorrow, I think.
Hmm.
Just to compare. And then I do want to do the IMAX at some point, and not LIMAX, crisis.
You got to be high-end, man.
That's right.
Jeez. Here we go.
You're the ones that rag on us.
I know.
Yeah, come on. I heard 153. Come on.
I don't know what you're talking about, huh?
Yeah,
what?
I know.
I will say there's actually some, you know, if you only saw the movie once and, you know, you aren't in the mood where you're like, don't suggest I see it again or I'll punch you. There are some cool things to keep an eye out for on a second viewing, like, you know, mud flap and skids vehicle modes. And one of the overhead shots when the Autobots are driving through the crater-ridden city, you know, when it's all been wrecked, right before the metal snake knocks Optimus's trailer off of his vehicle mode, I saw it, and there were moving pieces of debris that were driving in tandem with the Autobots, and I was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, those are the camera cars getting the close-up shots while they're driving. So you can actually see some of those, too. Which I thought was kind of funny. I mean, like, you know, it is a technical snafu to have them that visible, but... It was kind of funny because they're camouflaged, so it just looks like piles of debris are moving with the Autobots in perfect synchronicity, and I thought it was funny.
Well, I saw Skids and Mudflap in the hangar in the trailer, and I thought they were going to cut that, but it was there.
And when they're driving towards the Xanthium as well down that road, you can see them. They're sandwiched between Optimus and Ratchet, which are two of the bigger vehicles, so they're kind of obscured, but you can still see them.
Well, wouldn't they be dead at that point, too? That doesn't make any sense.
I have no idea. They're in there. they put their vehicle modes back together so they could drive the humans around.
Maybe they're like the Constructicons and there's just tons of them.
Yeah, I don't know. You know how Optimus Prime is with corpses. He doesn't make any bones about it. Practicality is practicality. Like,
right.
Do the car modes still work? Well, fix them. They will be remembered. And he like crashes them into a wall on the way there.
Give me their faces.
Yeah, I'd like to think that the jetpack he's wearing at the beginning of the movie is still parts of Jetfire that he's kind of cobbled together just to carry him around this corpse on his back.
Optimus Prime is a morbid MF-er. I'm just going to leave it there for now. don't know, Proto Man, I forgot. Did you see the movie in 3D or did you see it in
I saw it. Well, the initial preview screening was in the true 3D. It wasn't the like insane IMAX 3D. It was just straight up 3D.
Hmm.
And I've honestly, some people might not agree with me. I'm not a big fan of 3D personally. I guess because I just don't. It's not that I don't get it. It's just I'm not a glasses person, I guess, yeah, is the best way to put it. I know that sitting through the movie, I was kind of like holding up the glasses at some point. And I know it's like, oh, here's a scene with Epps. It's not 3D. I'll take off the glasses temporarily. I'm not a big fan of 3D personally. I guess it's wasted on me. I prefer to watch a movie where it's not dim. Mm. Maybe what you're describing, that IMAX thing with the big goggles and that, maybe that would be probably something more for me.
Yeah, they were very bright. They weren't dark like a real 3D.
I'm going to try that because I know I have a legitimate IMAX theater in my area. So for sure, probably I'm going to probably see it like that, and then I'll have a better idea. Because I'm not a big fan of the whole – like I saw Avatar, and I was just like, meh. You know, like this is the insane technology everyone's been hyping that made this movie the greatest selling movie of all time, you know? So I don't know. I saw it in regular 3D, and I liked it, but I want to see it in regular 2D, but there's no theaters that suck enough to actually carry it that way, which is kind of weird. I'm trying to find a theater that's like run down that'll have like a $5 matinee and then I could watch it in 2D.
That's what happened to me in Thor. I couldn't actually see Thor in 2D.
No, really?
No theater
that
in town.
The only way. Wow.
Yeah, all the theaters downtown had it in 3D. I was forced to see it in 3D and it was not good 3D. So that impacted my Thor viewing.
If I have to bring up something that I wanted to bring about with the movie, it's that usually I always have the big discussion with people because people are always like, you know, who's the strongest like Autobot ever? Like who's? And for years I'm always like, oh, it's Starsaber. It's always Starsaber. That's always been my answer for years and years and years. It's like no one could beat Starsaber. He's just unstoppable. This movie Prime, man.
Okay, yeah. I agree.
He's Superman.
Yes.
It's like after that Megatron battle, I was just like, "What?"
Yeah.
What?
You know what? When Prime said, "Let's find out," and right before he kills Megatron, I'm very sad to say, I predicted that fight would last all of 10 seconds. Cuz movie Optimus Prime is legitimately overpowered, I think, at this point. Like, just in a dramatic sense. He is too damn strong.
See, now, why in the first movie wasn't he, though? Like,
I don't know.
All of a sudden, when they fought, he was like, oh, I'm losing to Megatron. Sam,
see,
help.
Yeah.
The theory that I had from movie one to movie two was, I guess, training with humans during that time gap really made him really ruthless, or I don't know.
I guess.
Like, something happened between
one.
He is
too damn powerful, though, because at no point in this film did I ever, like, you know, at no point during this movie did I ever think Optimus Prime would be hurt, let alone die.
When he lost his arm, I was almost like, ooh, are they going to kill him? This would be cool.
Ah, I didn't think at all. I was just like,
And then with only one arm, he kills Megatron.
He not only
know?
Kills him, he bones him like a fish. He just rips out his whole spine.
Yeah. Straight up Mortal Kombat, like Sub-Zero, off with your head, fatality, flawless victory. Like, completely just finished him. And I'm just like, this Prime is broken. Like,
no, he is. No one balanced him. The dude's got like an infinite. He's like,
he's on God mode.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, I have fun with how murderous that dude gets. You know, for all the arguments there will be about whether or not he really is murderous, but like on a dramatic level, he is a little bit. You know, if he's in the fourth movie, I'm gonna have a real hard time buying that anything can threaten him.
it would have to be Unicron.
Yeah,
like there's
I don't even think
shorter than Unicron.
And Unicron has still got a handicap because guess what? Prime could just walk inside Unicron and just start eating him from the inside out. Like at this point, you know what Prime's gonna? All that Prime has left
give
to
me
do.
Your eye,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Prime is gonna eat something at this rate. He's just gonna take something like a human, a Decepticon, something. He's gonna stick them in his mouth and chew. That's still my thing.
Remember, kids, freedom is the right of all sentient beings. Freedom to be killed by his axe or his brass knuckles or
freedom to die.
Yeah, you get to choose your death.
Gutting hooks.
Now, wasn't the ending different actually in the book though?
Like, yeah, Gog told me all about it.
Like the comic, the novel, the kid junior one, and the movie all had slightly different endings.
That ending where he accepts Megatron's truce would have been so perfect, especially given Foundation, because that would have been And given, you know, that this is homicidal Optimus Prime, you know, if you, like, I'm, you know, I'm just laying it out there, regardless if you want to argue that or not, his character arc would have been perfect to end with him finally actually sparing the life of his greatest enemy and going, like, mm-hmm. you know what? It's time that I do realize I've become messed up and we've got to find peace somehow instead of just turning around and gutting him as well. And then, like, I don't know. I'll ask you guys, do you guys think that sometime in the future of this movieverse, that Optimus Prime is just going to become a danger to humanity? Like, I think he is myself.
I think that this Prime, because what I like is that there was a point where, especially it was around the Unicron trilogy, where Optimus Prime wasn't so much a character as it was just an archetype. It was just like you had to be, like the character had to be this way. Like when Japan had Lyo Convoy, if you had to describe Lyo Convoy's personality, it was, you know, that archetype, straight Optimus Prime character. And then you had characters of Optimus Primal that were different from that, that were more the imperfect leaders. Same what we liked about animated Optimus Prime. Big Convoy kind of creeps into what movie Prime is, where there's that little crazy one-man army sadisticness to him.
Yeah, that cannon.
And I like that. Well, yeah, and the canon, which I like about that. And I like that this Prime has his own unique character forged for him instead of him just being, this is movieverse G1 Prime.
Oh, absolutely. You I know? Mean, I you know, for all the stuff I say about him being crazy, I say that in a kind of endearing way because I like that
because
– yeah, it's his characteristic. Movieverse Prime is the sort of crazy one who has a fuse. It's a decent length fuse, but when you've run that fuse out, he goes crazy. And
well, it's not only that, like you've ever seen that image where people have chaotic good, chaotic evil, neutral good. I want to see one with all the different primes now.
And we're gonna have, yeah.
And now we're going to have like chaotic good and it's going to be movie Prime, you know?
Well, I think what's cool is Prime is not the example of a classic like Joseph Campbell. This is what a hero is. He's Michael Bay's version of what a hero is. A hero gets it done.
But that's what's so good about it too, is because every Prime, with the exception of just Big Convoy, because he kind of really skews away from that. But every Prime from every continuity of Japanese or otherwise has always just been that, you know, Soriwa, very straightforward, you know, clean cut good guy. Especially the way the Japanese handle it. There's like no originality whatsoever, whether it be Fire Convoy, Lyo Convoy, or just straight up Convoy. It's just, he's always been that character, and this one just completely like turns it on his head, where I almost for a split second felt sympathy for Sentinel Prime when he got killed.
No, I did too, but and that's why I really wish like that this Prime had been given that ending of, you know, finally deciding to spare someone's life, just because it would have finished his character really well.
Completely.
Whereas this just felt like, you know, if you guys haven't heard it yet, there's a great idea that Gog had, like, when he was watching the movie of what Prime did during that, like, da-da-da-da, like, you know, circling around him camera shot. And I just look at him, and then I look at the Ultimate Optimus Prime toy, and I kind of go, like, you know, that's Prime in movie 4 when he goes nuts and decides that America can't handle itself anymore and nukes it off the planet from orbit.
He's the authority, if you ever read those books.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
No, I got a better one. Because, see, we look at that Ultimate San Diego Comic-Con Prime with now the butterfly wings.
Yeah.
That's the corpse of Sentinel.
Yeah. He threw Sentinel on his back, and then he built
he's
a cannon.
Like, well, I'm not going to let this metal go to waste.
He took all of Q's research, and was like, hey, Q figured out how to build a cannon that can shoot holes in planets. I'll just put one of those on my armor. And, like, I don't know. I just, you know, especially with the opening of this movie with Prime, like, kind of going, like, we help out our human allies by dealing with their enemies. And I'm like, but their enemies are human, too. And, like, there's just some really, and I know it wasn't intentional, there's some really dark-ass foreshadowing in this movie of, like, this Prime one day just snapping and going, like, humanity has pulled a Sentinel Prime on me. I better deal with them likewise. And it's, like, shooting them through the head. I don't know. Prime is spooky.
Well, anything is possible. Who knows? Like we Prime might be the main villain in the next movie.
I would buy it. Since they didn't go for any kind of redemption on him, I would buy him being the mm-hmm. villain in the next movie.
I mean, you don't have to sell it anymore that Optimus Prime is the hero. You could do anything you want after a fourth movie.
Well,
he
sacrificed all of Chicago to prove a point to then go kill everyone.
Okay, yeah. Did anyone else catch that where he was like, we had to do this to make sure the humans knew that they needed us around? And Chicago's in ruins as bones are falling from the sky. <He's> like, just to
we
prove
will
you
kill all of them.
just to prove you need us and that you want us to kill them all. We're going to let Chicago burn.
That's the one thing that, like, kind of threw me is, like, he goes from the, like, we're going to kill everyone to, like, kind of, like, classical Prime where he, like, we have to free them and we're going to take the fight to them and be, like, all, you know, kind of noble leader. And then he went back to killing Rage.
Yeah.
That seemed a little bipolar.
Well, that's the thing is his Prime, I think, is he's one of those. He's got that caricature where it's like, you know, he'll, if he trusts you, he will trust you implicitly until you turn on him. And then when you turn on him, you go from being his friend to being meat. And so he will.
Why didn't he just blow away the CIA director, whoever that chick was, when you lied to me?
I bet you if he didn't have, like, Ironhide standing right behind him, he probably would have. But that's why, you know, we had another theory on the last podcast that Ratchet was keeping him heavily sedated throughout the entire film. And, you know, whenever,
it's time for your meds.
Yeah, and Prime's like, I don't need medicine, and takes a shot. And, like, whenever Prime loses his mind, that's when Ratchet goes like, you know, the rest of the Autobots confer with him and go like, I think it's time to stop giving him his shots. And then that's why Ratchet also disappears for the end of any of these films, or hangs back, is because he doesn't want to be anywhere near Optimus.
Ratchet's like the worst medic ever. He's done nothing. I mean, it would have been better if the movie ended when he's like, when you fought well, and Bumblebee's like, it's been like 5 years, you can't fix my damn vocal cords.
So that's like, and I thought that was
such a
Prime
dick
standing
move.
There,
yeah.
He's Prime standing there, he's missing an arm, you know, and then Ratchet's just standing there like, I think I should do something about that.
What do you do, Ratchet?
Well, I mean,
are you like bleeding out or something? Are you okay?
Just for
like,
Ratchet to congratulate Bumblebee, though, you know, after the first movie ending, it sounds like he's rubbing it. He's like, "Hey, Bumblebee, you did a real good job. Shame about your vocal cords. Wish I could do something." Anyway, I gotta go collect some corpses. Bye bye.
But,
I characterize these characters in strange ways, I admit. Where were
one
we?
One thing
there?
Also, what I want, like at the end, what happened with Wheelie and Brains?
Yes, like, I would like to talk about that too.
Part of me thinks that they're still okay.
I see no reason
to
assume
the ship didn't blow up. It just kind of had a harsh landing. And I mean, they're not humans; they're robots. They could clang around in that little ship.
Yeah,
and they're small enough. They probably could have just rolled away.
Exactly. I fully believe they survived that, because to give them that, to make them basically the twins, except funny. And like a way that works, like they
were awesome. I enjoyed
they were
them
awesome.
A lot.
I loved them in this movie. They were great, and to have them just get killed like semi off screen like that would be a travesty to me. And you know, and I wish there was just a scene during the credits of them just popping up out of a river or something like that, or you know, because this happened to Wheelie last time. Like I said, you know, the twins and Wheelie just vanished from the movie by the end. And
and it's not only that, they fed him that line like that it was going to be the end, like, this is it, Brains, or you know, like, it's
it was
like they were like, that line was fed to also say that these characters are dying after this scene and it's going to be off screen, you know, and it's like, oh,
screw
no.
them.
Like if that line wasn't there, we'd all just have that assumption that they're okay.
And you know, I believe that the voice actors for Wheelie and Brains were the twins voice actors.
Yes.
So that was kind of cool too.
As I was watching the movie, I was wondering, were these the replacement twins? Because they were too afraid. They already offended people with the last movie. So we still want to have two wacky characters, but let's make it Wheelie and let's throw in another guy. Yeah, here we go. These are now the replacement twins.
That's how I took them. And I think they did work out a lot better than the twins. I know, you know, that by the nature of their being small, goofy guys, a lot of people are just going to hate them pretty much up front, but I was quite pleased with them, and I wish there would be a Brains toy of some kind.
Yeah,
and an updated Wheelie, because the Wheelie toy I don't think really gives the character or the model justice.
I'm still stressing we'll get a Supreme 1x1 scale Wheelie one day. That's what I want. I want a nice super detailed 1x1 scale Supreme Wheelie.
That would be high end.
That would be amazing.
It'll be funded entirely by Tom Kenny.
Yeah,
he's funded himself. Anyway, let's move down the list some more. Jared, have you got a point you'd like to bring up?
Let's see. Going back to the bit you mentioned about Bumblebee getting captured off screen. So he's sitting there in front of Soundwave and he's all helpless and Soundwave's going to kill him and blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly out of nowhere, suddenly he can just kill Soundwave without a second thought. And it's like, well, why didn't you just do that? Because his hands weren't tied down.
That's because Bumblebee he's Optimus Prime Jr.
I guess
he hasn't realized yet that he's also plot invincible, but
When he has to gut someone, he'll gut someone.
And they wanted you to think you could die. That's what it was.
Well, I didn't think about that, though. If you're right, because he was just sitting there with his hands on top of his head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was not restrained in any way.
And Ratchet was even weirder. Ratchet was just going like, "Don't touch me! Don't touch me!" As he's getting, like, shoved around by that one Decepticon. Ratchet was just kind of like, because Ratchet was literally just walking up to Decepticons and getting shoved back. So, like, that's the whole scene was really weird. And then it's almost capped off by the fact that, you know, they were going to keep him alive until the human shows up and says, "No, kill them!
Hey, we should kill them, yeah."
And Soundwave is all like, he's all like, you know, "No, we keep them alive." He's like, "No, you should kill them." Soundwave's like, "Yeah, we should kill them." Like, Soundwave just came off as a dope in that scene, I felt.
Yeah. I kind of felt like maybe the ship crashing kind of, like, distracted some of the Decepticons, and maybe rubble fell on them, and that's why they could fight back all of a sudden.
I guess.
Like, they were outnumbered before.
Well, that was kind of, what was implied, was that that was a big distraction.
If
that
only...
That whole comeback.
If only there was some device in the franchise, like handcuffs, if you will, that could induce a sort of physical stasis to prevent a character from being able to fight back.
Oh, stasis.
Nerd.
I don't know. Where have we heard that before?
If only. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
But then he wouldn't have been able to punch his head off. So.
Yeah.
From his crotch, by the way.
I did like that, especially considering that I'd kind of that Soundwave had lost my support by that scene, because I was like, all right, you're not even cool anymore. You're just a dope. So when Bumblebee punched his crotch and then shot up through his spine and vaporized his head, I was like, all right, that's neat. I like that.
Maybe he was Laserbeak's lackey. Maybe he wasn't. It wasn't reversed like normal.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I that's who we haven't talked about at all yet.
Oh, Laserbeak's awesome.
I love Laserbeak. I talked about him a whole lot, but
hell.
Yeah. If you guys got any Laserbeak love you want to drop, just go ahead. Go right ahead. I mean that I'll throw out again the point I made.
It's true. We have not talked about Ken Jeong at all.
Oh yeah, that's right, Ken Jeong. I forgot about that. Well, I'll get to him after Laserbeak. I just want to reiterate for you guys, I want to see if any of you guys agree with me or are going to get offended. I actually think this is the best Laserbeak in the mythos, not just in the movie version.
I agree. I was shocked when he talked, but I really, really liked it. I thought he was really well done.
Yeah, and I was sitting there going like, man, I love this Laserbeak. And I was like, have I ever loved a Laserbeak? I was like, no.
Has Laserbeak ever done anything other than...
Yeah, has he ever been anything but an accessory?
Well, no, you have to realize Laserbeak in G1... almost killed Optimus Prime on a few occasions. Like Laserbeak got the job done in G1. Even the episode, I believe it's not Ultimate Doom, not the Autobot run. Oh my god, this is gonna bother me now. But you know, Laserbeak has taken care of business in G1, and it just goes to show that this character is capable. You know, I think the only time he's ever been like kind of short putted was when he was used in the Beast Wars. Dawn of the Past kind of thing, where he was just used as that souvenir exclusive, and then he kind of died.
Or is in Armada, where he was just kind of like a little drone thing.
Well, yeah, that one too.
Oh, right.
Kind of a
that happened.
Yeah, he was actually only in one episode, but and then sat in Alexis's pocket the rest of the series. But,
hey, Laserbeak.
Yeah, you're orange. But yeah, like that amazingly well done. It looked like he was really running the show and manipulating everything and getting a lot of headshots,
well,
killing off everybody.
I mean, anyone else have any thoughts on Laserbeak?
I feel he was probably the most effective Decepticon in the movie as far as getting the job done, what he was set out to do.
And I loved how much he enjoyed it, too.
I have to laugh, too, because he's he could keep shifting his body and changing and turning into all different sorts of things. If that's the case, how come his toy is probably one of the most useless alt modes? I was kind of disappointed about that.
Well,
when
it's like, how can you convey that, though, in a toy form?
I know.
The toy is what happens when Laserbeak is left to choose
magic.
His own alt mode. All those other times, those were situational. But then, like, you know, if you ever sit down with Laserbeak, like, hey, Laserbeak, you know, hey, buddy, deep down, what do you want to be? He's like, I want to be a VTOL. And then he turns into a VTOL with his face painted on the side that looks like a bird folded up. And you're all like, that's, hey, Laserbeak. He's like, what? And you're like, that's, are you sure? He's like, this is beautiful. Okay.
This is what I want to be.
I mean, I really enjoyed Laserbeak. I kind of wish that, like, this was the second movie in the trilogy and, like, Laserbeak and Soundwave's, like, whole escapades of controlling the human race to not have anything happen would have been, like, a cool kind of first movie.
I don't know
if anyone else felt that way.
Yeah.
I felt very much like, you know, this movie, the one downside of this movie is it had such a neat little idea for them that it also made you just start questioning, like, where were they for the first two? Just, they seem to be really effective at what they do. I know one of them was in space, but, like, was Laserbeak just asleep in space most of the time? Or what was going on
possibly
there?
All we know is that Bumblebee took out another Soundwave cassette.
Yeah, and it was kind of a bummer how Laserbeak went, because that was a bit of a silly death of just like, I hold your head in front of the cannon, patoink, all right, your head's like, I said this last podcast, but I also was kind of bugged how the only way you could tell if a Transformer was dead is if their head fell off. That was kind of the mark in the movie of like, okay, is he dead yet? No, his head rolled off. Okay, now he's dead. We're going to lose Empire pretty soon, so I want to throw out, okay, this is a very important topic that we didn't cover last time, and I figure we should cover it now. Ken Jeong, we talked about him last time, but we did not talk about him in comparison to his role in The Hangover. So I've been told there's very, very important comparisons to be made here. I was wondering, have any of you seen The Hangover?
I have.
Yes.
Well, yeah. How do you feel about Ken Jeong's performance in this film, as opposed to his... I suppose you could call it his very memorable...
His seminal role?
His seminal role in The Hangover. I mean, do you think this is comparable? Do you feel that this perhaps, you know, a slap in the face of the fans of The Hangover? Do you think that...
I would have preferred if he was the character from The Hangover, actually. That gangster billionaire mogul. That would have been awesome.
But he got a little bit gangster in this one. Just a touch.
Yeah, well, he did have those guns. Aw, shit.
He got in the face of the boss.
When he said that, I loved it. It was the lines afterwards that I was kind of like, all right, now you're wrecking all my goodwill by talking more while you're holding your guns.
Yeah.
That's also go ahead.
He kept his clothes on.
That's true. That's
kind
true.
Of. Kind
relatively.
Sort of. Yeah.
That's been one of the most hotly brought up anecdotes from the film by those who really hate the film. You know, Deep Wang. Everyone just keeps talking about Deep Wang. Now, personally...
And you know what's amazing, too?
What?
That was one of the few human scenes that was actually left in the comic book version, was the whole dropping of the pants. That was left. They made sure to keep that scene in the comic book version.
Naturally.
Which shows that was probably very important in the original script.
Well, it's a big plot point, bro.
Yeah.
That's right. You're going to start fronting on my cabbage patch? I'm Asian, too. I can do this. So you guys are saying, though, pretty much that you feel this did not trump his role in The Hangover, and if you want to see the full Ken Jeong experience, one should still admire it in The Hangover.
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to get that clear. You know, that's very important stuff. And how do you guys feel about the way that Deep Wang has been made into the testicle scene of this movie that people just keep talking about no matter what you say? They're always going to bring up Deep Wang. Personally, I think that's, if he was in the whole movie, I could see it, but given that he was only in for about 10 minutes and then died on screen, I feel that they vindicated the use of him if it was offensive to somebody, but I don't know if...
Haters gonna hate is what I say.
Haters gonna hate?
I mean, I pretty much was about to say the same thing, like... they kill off the guy, so it's not like, you know, he was an annoying pest and then they offed him. So if anything, the annoying guy's dead. So stop. I don't know. It didn't bother me.
Hmm. Yeah, I was fine with him. I actually was quite amused by him while he was in the film. So I thought it was funny that people keep bringing him up, because I kind of go like, well, don't you wish they killed that character? Oh, wait, they did. And he went out screaming out a window and splattered on the sidewalk. What else do you want?
I had no idea people were even harping on this.
It's Deep Wang is the thing all the non-Transformers fans are bringing up everywhere. They just keep saying, oh, you got Deep Wanged.
Okay. Well, like, I avoid that by not talking to crazy people about it again, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, nice. We dropped another slam on them. Here we go.
That's right.
But, yeah, we are losing Empire. Because he's apparently got some high-end activity to go get up to.
It's my birthday weekend. My friends are taking me out.
Wait, it's your birthday?
Weekend. My birthday's on Sunday, yeah.
Aww. Well, I hope you have a good time.
Well, thank you.
And happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday,
dear
the Empire 3.
Now he's going to have to sync this up perfectly.
Happy birthday to you.
It's going to sound horrible.
No, it's going to sound like it's really heartfelt, because it was.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good birthday. You go and stand up for your silly old village voice as much as you want out there, and we'll... Yeah, that's right, I went
It's a respectable news industry.
Respectable. Well, they actually are, but nonetheless. Yeah. We did this rant last time. And little did I know that the Empire was one of the Village Voice's personal boys. He's gonna be all like, what you talking about?
Talking about Willis?
I turn on the Skype call. I bring him in. He's the first one in. First thing I hear is like, so I hear you've been talking nuts about my Village Voice. I might be dramatizing events slightly here. But,
just a bit, seeing as I haven't gotten to listen to that episode yet. It's been out for like 2 hours. But
why haven't you listened yet? You've had a whole 2 hours to listen to all four hours. Yeah. God damn. All right.
Sorry, Massa.
Oh, geez. And don't use rapid share. That's small time.
Mega upload, Michael.
Yeah.
No, mega upload all the way.
That's right. You guys know what I'm talking about. All right. Well, thanks for coming by, Empire. We'll catch you later.
All right. Bye.
All right.
Later.
Take it easy.
See ya.
So, well, now that he's gone, he's still here listening. Oh, is he going? He's going. Okay. Let's keep doing the roundtable a little bit more. See what else we can squeeze out of our fan juices.
Okay. Well, one thing that was different also was in the original movie itself, the dog that Sam ends up with is Bone Crusher, which is, I guess you could call it Michaela's dog. And we don't really know how he ended up with that dog. And you can't really say that the comic books would have handled that, because in the comic book version, he actually ends up with, not with Bone Crusher, the Mastiff, but with Frankie and Mojo, his original dogs that he had back with his family. So, and it's weird too, because in the comic you have Frankie and Mojo. It's the same two dogs, and they even have the same doghouse that they had, which is like it was the double decker doghouse. And I don't know, that was kind of weird that they went and they changed the dogs too. I don't know, like there's supposed to be some kind of like story plot where Sam got Michaela's dog or something. I don't know.
I have no idea. I mean, it was weird to me that he had a dog and it wasn't one of the pre-established dog characters.
It was one of the pre-established dogs that existed. It was Michaela's dog. That was the one that was at the garage.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like that might have been an after effect of the very odd way the movie dealt with the lack of Michaela, which was, I think, like Brains or Wheelie just kind of goes like, you know, the last one was a jerk. I didn't like her. And like, that's all they say. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Really just brushing this one. Like they made no bones about it. Like you open up with a butt shot of Rosie Huntington-Whiteley. And it's like, all right, I guess we're just jumping right into this.
Oh, yeah.
That really surprised me. I was like, I was right off the bat, I'm like, okay, they're going to deal with this somehow. And then throughout the movie, Sam's going to meet this girl and they're going to start courting or start some kind of relationship under fire. Like,
nope.
No, okay, they're doing it right off the bat. I'm like, okay.
Right off the bat, it's like, Michaela who? You know?
Yeah.
We're going to make you forget her as quickly as possible.
Yep.
You know?
Well, that also ties into something I noticed about this movie, which was that you actually didn't need to see Revenge of the Fallen for this film.
Except for one scene, just one scene.
Well, even
where John Turturro's character he's posing near the pyramids.
Yeah,
in the painting.
Well, even then, it's like
there you go.
All you need to know about Revenge of the Fallen is like a handful of bullet points. And they could they could have just had 5 bullet points for a minute at the start of the film, and that would have been all you needed. And I thought it was funny that like, you know, they say all this stuff in the aftermath of Revenge of the Fallen, you know, about, you know, at first they're like, oh, it's fine, this is a good movie to work on. Then they kind of turned on it after a while. By the time Dark of the Moon comes out, they are outright retconning the thing. It's like, something happened in Egypt.
A lot of the things that we say, well, you'd have to see Revenge of the Fallen to know about these characters, that character. But there's a lot of characters that show up out of the blue anyways when it comes to Transformers, especially even in this movie. No one we're not explained how Dino came to us and everything. So to say like, well, how would you know where Wheelie came from or where this dog came from? It'll just be the same thing like any of the other characters, you know?
It's very implied that just a bunch of Autobots showed up. So if you never saw Revenge of the Fallen, it's very easy to just buy that Sideswipe showed up with Dino and Q, the Wheelie showed up with
Wheelie,
them.
Wheelie's just some, you know, Sam's new buddy now that now chills with him and Bumblebee. Or, you know, like, you could just, you know, connect the dots from there. Like, the only thing that you could really say is just when Sam said, "I saved the world twice," you know, that was about it.
Yeah. So I thought that
I'd argue that seeing Revenge of the Fallen would actually confuse you more because you'd start to wonder, where are the twins? Where's Jolt?
Why isn't the Matrix destroyed?
When I left when I left that movie, it was just me trying to figure out how the whole plot even fit together.
Yeah.
There were so many things where I was like, okay, so if Sentinel was really a bad guy, who was shooting at him when he was escaping Cybertron? Did those Decepticons not get the memo from Megatron? You know, there's a lot of like little things where I was trying to like piece it together and make sense of it all. And even now I'm still trying to like, you know, again, I'm trying to expect too much perfection from a Bay movie, but at the same time, I'm just like going, well, you know, why did this happen? Why did that happen? Who are those guys? Were those guys in the ship with him Decepticons? Were they Autobots?
You know, I'm gonna throw in for a sec with some of the harder critics of the movie and say, like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can say, you know, this is a Michael Bay film. There's certain concessions you make. At the same time, there are also certain concessions that push it a bit too hard for me, and some of them are when parts of the story just literally feel like they're missing, and some of them can be filled in by a comic book, but even then, ever since Star Wars Episode 3 with General Grievous, I have always been an opponent of the idea of introducing something, not explaining it, and then just saying, well, you were supposed to read the comic, you were supposed to see the cartoon, etc., etc.
It's like that.
A comic and a cartoon should add to it, but it shouldn't be mandatory viewing for the film itself to make sense, and that's always been one of my growing problems with the Transformers live action films is that, you know, I sit there and people have all these critiques and I tell them, oh no, this is what actually happened. They're like, how do you know that? I'm like, well, I read the comic book. And I keep stopping going like, I just sound like a jackass sticking up for this movie by constantly bringing up like, well, it happened in the comic. It happened in the cartoon. It happened in the pre-novel. It happened blah, blah. And I'm like, you know what? I shouldn't have to be telling people this and people shouldn't have to do this research to know why any of this is happening. Especially when you hit this point where if you read enough of it, then the movie itself starts contradicting things.
When it's a strong character point. In the case of, let's say, go to Grievous, his deep breathing.
Exactly. You know? Why is he a robot that is gasping and has lungs? It's like, because.
And like, again, going, you know, to Star Wars, that was the thing with the cartoon. It's like, oh, well, you know, because Samuel Jackson's character kind of screwed that up, you know? And it's like, so at the, you know, with the movie, with the first movie, let's say, why does Bumblebee have the voice problem? They touch on it quickly so that someone who didn't read the comic book prior that explains why Bumblebee's voice box is messed up, it'll be okay. You know, like it's not a big thing. But when you get down to more things like, again, with the movie where you're like, we're going to Dark of the Moon where there's a lot of things missing. And then you're like, well, where did this person come up? You know, Rosie's character was fleshed out a little bit more prior to the actual movie in the comic book stuff, because there was the prequel comic book stuff where Rosie and Sam are there too. Now, granted, the movie tries to put in little things. Oh, here's how they met in 5 seconds flat, you know?
Yeah. Which helps. It certainly does help that they weren't just having them like explain away vocally how they met, that they actually had scenes shot for it. I really did like that.
You know, they actually tried to like fill the gaps in there, but there is a lot of stuff that, again, Shockwave being one of those examples where he was a character that has a lot of fiction, if you will, prior to that movie appearance that I guess if you're someone who's like, need more Shockwave, there's the place to go for that, especially with Foundation. Well, not Foundation, the other one.
Rising Storm.
Rising Storm. Yeah.
We were kind of joking with Shockwave that, like, having seen the movie, we're kind of like, oh, that's why Corey Burton turned down the role. Because he only had one line. On a slightly lighter note, I wanted to ask you guys about some of the G1 parallels there were in this film. Be they intentional or not. Like, the moment when I was, like, have any of you guys ever seen a three-parter called The Ultimate Doom?
Yeah, I turned to Aaron during the movie and said, holy crap, this is The Ultimate Doom.
Yeah, I was like, where's Dr. Archiville? Why wasn't Patrick Dempsey called like Mr. Archiville? That would have been perfect. Maybe that would have pushed it a bit too hard. I don't know. And I kept thinking to myself, like, is this an homage to Ultimate Doom? Or, like, does Aaron Kruger know that? Or is this just a really cool coincidence?
Like, well, it's not only that, too, because it also kind of gives the twist of what they could do for the next movie.
Yeah.
Because the way that Cybertron disappears is kind of a black hole. And considering the Unicron implications now with black holes, you know, like, again, I'm stretching again.
Geez.
I'm stretching again, but it's just, you know, there's little things that, you know, that were all over the place when it came to G1 nods here and there.
Well, yeah, like, you know, when I watched the movie again, when the planet got sucked in on itself, I kind of sat there going, like, I wonder what would happen if two horns just grew out of that vortex.
Exactly. That's just it, where that's one way I could see that they could move on to the next villain or the next piece of space that they want to handle.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not only that, because I remember when we had all those early video game leaks and we saw, like, something that looked like Junkion.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember? And and all of that not being a factor, like, you know, space wasn't a big issue with the movie, and I was like, you know, I would have liked to see that. And now it's like, I guess so. Who knows where we could go from there? You know, maybe they could take it into space, leave Earth, make it a more of a, I don't know.
Well, there were a few other G1 cartoon nods. I know people talked about it, but the only one I really remember is the Ultimate Doom one. But I was told there was at least one more major one from an episode I always forget, and I don't remember the context on it now.
Well, it's the Lincoln Memorial one.
I was about
That's
to say,
right.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing with that one though also, is because, in the PS2, PS3, first movie game, the very first movie game, the console versions, when you beat the game with the Decepticons, the 2007 Megatron from the movie rips Lincoln Memorial and sits in his chair. So it already happened in the movie verse. If anything, you see, because people are like, oh, it's so a nod to G1. And to me, it's not so much a nod to G1. It was a nod to the video game doing that prior based on the movie verse already. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That was one example of it.
This is also one of those points where I also want to point out another time when critics got a little bit nuts is there were some people who really got mad about the Lincoln Memorial scene. And I was like, maybe it's because I'm Canadian. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know. Crasis, Jared, did you guys see anything that made you feel a little bit like there might have been intentional or unintentional nods to older stuff? Like outside of the Ultimate Doom thing.
I mean, yeah, that was what jumped out at me the most, and the Lincoln Memorial thing. But,
Yeah, I was about to say the Lincoln thing. Else.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Lincoln thing.
And like I mentioned before, Starscream's characterization was very G1.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like, you know, there is, you know, Ironhide dying. That's the such heroic
nonsense kind of thing.
Yep. Like, you know, humans working with the Decepticons. That's, you know, like Darker Arkaville or even like the temporary, you know, truces that existed with what's his name there from Prime Target?
Oh, yeah.
Chumley.
Right. Yes. Lord Chumley. Yes. Where was Lord Chumley in this film?
You know, like, it's just... You know, so to have, like, Patrick Dempsey's character, who was also, you know, I'm so glad that I didn't know that Soundwave was, because I knew that Soundwave turned into something, and when I played the video games, you know, they always try to obscure the alt modes so that they don't look like they're licensed cars. So I didn't know that Soundwave was the Mercedes, and I'm glad that I didn't know it, because that added to that extra, oh, you know, here's Patrick Dempsey's character, and he's also, like, working for the Decepticons. So we had that Dr. Arkaville, you know, here's this guy who also has technology and everything working with the Decepticons in tandem.
Yeah.
You know, for their own personal goals. There's not much after that. Like, again, the arc is a reference to the cartoon, not the cartoon.
How do you guys feel about the fact that the arc can never actually land? It only ever crashes anywhere.
That's the arc for you.
Like, what's up, guys? Build a better ship. Like, I mean, it survives the crash as well, but man.
If anything, like, the movie possessed a lot of references just to all kinds of just media. Like, again, the character of Q,
Oh, definitely. I mean,
we all made that connection to James Bond when he started handing out the weapons to everyone.
And
you know, this does this, and you know, be sure to use it at this point because it's going to help you during the plot. You know,
there's also a reference I didn't really see, and again, this is one of those ones that probably wasn't fully intentional, but Proto Man actually pointed this out on Twitter. I linked it in the Skype chat. There was a Transformer watch called Scorpia.
Ah, yes, that one. Yeah.
And this movie had a Transformer watch that was a nasty little bug thing.
So, yeah, in G2 there was Scorpia, which was one of the, it was one of the repurposed Microman watches from back in the late 70s, early 80s that ended up as a G2 watch years later. And then we have this crazy ass, the painful watch. I don't even know. I guess it wasn't mind control. It was just it would inflict pain if needed. And it also was kind of scorpion looking.
Yeah.
You know? So, hey, maybe it was unintentional. Maybe it was just like, hey, you know, it's a.
Well, you know what? What looks like it can turn into a watch, a centipede, a scorpion, those kind of things.
Yeah, it looks painful. You know, that'll sting you when you're not doing what you want it to do. So
got little needles on it. It'll gouge.
Bugman.
Hell yeah. let's roundtable a bit more. I'll ask you guys if you have any more points you'd like to bring up because it's a movie that's got stuff in it. Jared, you got anything else?
Let's see. Skip me for now. I'll come up with something else.
All right, I'm gonna put you on the spot, Krasis. I'm turning on the desk lamp, pointing it at your face.
There's one more silly deep one, but I'll get to it after.
If you want to go ahead now, I'll
just for people who read Last Stand of the Wreckers. Pretty much, there was a little one there that's related to the Wreckers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ship, the Xanthian. That's actually the name of the ship of the Wreckers in the IDW books.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
I had heard that somewhere.
So
okay.
That's, again, like everyone was all in love for Last Stand of the Wreckers, and I'm like, how come no one mentioned that?
I never really thought of their
Everyone's
ship.
Like, oh, Last Stand of the Wreckers, Nick Rosh, amazing, best book ever. No one mentioned the Xanthian ship?
Only ever think, you know, my first thought was, hey, Nick Rosh and Overlord being, you know, a perverse Marquis de Sade. That's where I tend to go.
But yeah, the ships had the same name, so hey.
That's kind of
I didn't think the writers for the movie would go that deep, so yeah.
Either it's a coincidence to the extreme, or this guy, was named Kruger, really did some kind of homework or something.
I want to see a panel with Aaron Kruger, because there are so many little things in this movie that, you know, they're little enough to be deeper than they might seem. Like, especially two of the Wreckers having Wrecker names.
Well, really. It's not only that, too. Using Russians as a piece of the past really makes that 80s link to what Transformers' history is, too.
It makes you think of Carbomia and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, that's just it. It creates that whole, like, you know, it's going straight back to the 80s where that was the end of the Cold War and all that stuff. So really, it really makes me wonder, like, what he was thinking and all the little, like the little nods that we're not picking up on that he probably did as a, you know, because there's always like, oh, you see that thing there? Yeah, I did that because in that episode of so-and-so, something happened. And
yeah. I would love for Aaron Kruger to come by, much like Kurtzman and Orsi came by that one BotCon.
It's one of those things that I really hope we're going to get a commentary track that isn't Bay.
Yeah, that'd be great too.
You know, that'll actually
what else is he
going like,
to say, right? Like, you've...
Well, he's just going to... It's the same thing with the Revenge of the Fallen one, where it was just blah, you know? So it'd be really nice to have, like, Kruger, like, going, you know, when I wrote this scene, like, I was trying to homage, I don't know, like, you know, this thing from Toy Story. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up here. It's just, you know, like, I just wanted to, like, you know, because there's, again, like, stuff like the Mexican standoff, you know? Stuff like little things like that, and it's like, where was your, like, you know, did you see the sidearm sideswipe toy? What like, was that implied to you that this character that was known for having swords now has guns? You know, like,
yeah, and then like, popped the sword out afterwards, kind of like hinting.
Well, that's just it. Like, how did that process go about? Because I mean, if someone would have told me prior to a sidearm sideswipe toy being created, you know, that he's going to be in a scene where he's holding two guns, you'd be like, no, the dude has swords, what are you talking about, you know? Like,
yeah,
so it you know, that again, seeing it from the toy process where the character's toy evolved into having two weapons and now how that's used in that really cool scene with Crankcase and Crowbar, if I remember correctly, the two dreads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really, really, really cool. And not that's another thing too, because then you have, there was one scene that had a lunar rover in it, And it could have been Roller that came with the Ark.
Mm-hmm.
You see, like, some kind of lunar rover when Optimus
there's
goes...
There's a focus on the lunar... I remember now.
It looked pretty similar.
Yeah,
they had a similar design because...
Well, the camera closes in on it, too, in a really weird way, and it never really follows up on why it kind of pointed at it for that long.
And, you know, it's one of those things where, because it was named Roller, and it was with Prime when they went to go explore the moon, when they were going to go check out the remnants and everything. So, hey, is that another piece of the trailer? I don't know. I'm stretching again, but...
And I mean, that is also one of the crits I drop is that, you know, we come up with all this stuff, but a majority of what we come up with tends to be like, well, I saw this thing and I thought maybe the unspoken intent was, and especially with, because I coined the term super robot media on stuff like the Transformers films, where I'm kind of like, super robot media is the one where it's not ham-fisted to actually just spell some of this stuff out, because you're trying to communicate living robots. At that point, you do kind of need them to start saying things.
Oh, and yeah, completely.
That's one of the things I do kind of found weak about all the live-action movies, is that there's a lot of stuff where it's kind of like, as an audience, especially if you like the movie, you're kind of really ready to go like, well, I kind of think maybe, you know, this happened and this happened, but then when you step back, it's like you're saying, I kind of think this happened. I don't actually know if this happened. and I'm matching this up to ancillary material that may or may not have even been consulted by the filmmakers. And it's, I don't know. It's double-edged for me.
Well, and it's all, well, that's also, it's for anyone that says like, oh, Michaela was actually riding Long Arm, or if like, when you see, I remember a lot of people, what was the name? Cause you have Salvage is the red repaint of what was the blue
Dropkick.
A lot of people, I remember at first were saying Dropkick was Michaela's boyfriend's vehicle with the 19 inch dubs or whatever, you know, like everyone was repurposing toys to things that appeared in the movie that didn't transform, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of little things like that. I also wanted to bring up, I just remembered now, which was interesting, is because Buzz Aldrin appeared in the movie, the actual Buzz Aldrin.
In a really odd cameo, yes.
Yeah. But what I found fascinating about that was because a couple of years ago, there was the huge thing where, oh, the moon landing never happened. And he punched a dude, like he attacked a dude for like even making joke of that something that he did was a complete farce and fake, you know? And then here he is showing up in a movie going, yeah, that whole thing I did, it was a big conspiracy. And,
I thought so too, just the fact that he agreed to come in and in a fictional way imply that he was actually on a secret Black Ops mission to retrieve alien robot parts from the moon. And I was like,
exactly.
you know why he was okay with that? Because it still said he went to the moon.
I guess so. Because that's why, because I remember watching in the theater and I'm like, wait a minute, Buzz, didn't you like punch a dude out for implying that like, for like, yeah, wasn't it weird that your flag was, you know, flapping in the air when it was on the moon, you son of a, you know, like, and then he punched the dude out, you know? Like, don't you dare imply. But that was cool. Like, that was a part of the movie. I like stuff like that where it goes back and it changes established history and puts twists on it. I like that kind of stuff with John F. Kennedy. This is why we went to the moon.
Well,
this is
I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you guys what you thought of CG Kennedy, because I liked him, but he was creepy.
Yeah, agreed.
His eyes were huge. Like he reminded me of CG Orville Redenbacher.
Oh God.
I don't know. It was endearing, but because we saw CG Kennedy at BotCon, and I was already thinking that when we saw him there. I was like, oh,
yeah,
man.
Like, but you know, I appreciate that kind of stuff. I like, I like it when they go back and try. Well, you know, this is the reason why this happened. This is the reason why that happened, and you know, just completely like again the whole when they lost contact with them on the moon and saying there's something that happened during that time, you know, and that's all been a piece of American history with the Apollo 11 and the Saturn V, you know, so to add little things to that, oh, didn't you know that during that time, during that that small black period, you know, that they were, you know, doing a special, you know, Autobot run and, you know, all kinds of little crazy things. I love that. I love that kind of stuff because I love taking our timeline, our real, as DC would coin it, Earth Prime, if you will, and then, you know, repurposes onto an existing fictional timeline and making, you know, adding stuff to it, because that's always fun. It takes fiction and makes it reality in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, there's a lot of things that always have to be written out and this and that, but that's something that's really, I really enjoyed about the movie. I'm just trying to think, there was other stuff like that too, because there was a lot of that NASA stuff where they were saying like, well, again, when they were following the Russians, you know, why they didn't go back to the moon again.
The Russians took pictures of pillars and stuff like
that. Yeah, you know, like...
Well, I love the Chernobyl bit. It's why Chernobyl melted down.
Yeah, exactly.
They were trying to use that bit from the Ark.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all those kind of little things there where...
Or even saying, like, you know, the reason why the space program shut down, one of the accountants got bought in, or, you know, quote-unquote, bought by the Decepticons.
Yeah, exactly, and completely stopping any revisits to the moon and everything, and you know, and then there's the obvious logical explanations in reality of why, you know, we stopped going to the moon and stuff, but then, you know, just adding a little bit of science fiction to it, making it fun, you know, and I like that kind of stuff, because that stuff exists, like, it's the same way that, you know, the Mummy had that, where it would repurpose, you know, using Egyptian history and everything. I love that kind of stuff, because it takes something that was, you know, reality and adding a piece of science fiction to it and then making it even more interesting than what it really was.
You know? I mean, I'll throw out there, too, some folks get a bit uptight about it. And, you know, I can understand to a point of, you know, like, oh, man, they're messing with history so much. I'm like, you know, I understand if it was important to you. You don't like
it's
to see it
screwed
with. It's
not a retcon.
But, yeah, at the same time, it's all in a fictional sci-fi universe, so they're not going to... I don't think they're implying, you know, that the moon landing was all about stealing alien technology. I don't think that they're implying that the Russians took pictures of space bridge pillars, you know. And so if people get uptight about the historical stuff, I always say, like, you know, I dig why you're getting annoyed by it. At the same time, I really – it doesn't annoy me at all. So I guess I'm just thinking on a different wavelength.
And so, and also, again, the best part of the movie, I think, maybe if you want to end it this way, is that it made me go back to the toy line and really look at things differently, specifically the Ark.
A lot of people, I think even people who had lots of problems with the film, were driven to at least one more toy purchase by that movie. I mean, how many people went back for Laserbeak after the film?
I think the big one was Megatron. I think that, because I had like no interest in Megatron in the first two movies at all. I've never been a fan of Decepticon characters in general, with the exception of like Shockwave and a Beast Wars Megatron and stuff like that. But this movie, Megatron intrigued me in a way. Even on a visual level, I loved that cape and the scarf or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that really added to the character's visual, you know, aesthetic. But just the character was interesting, the way he was handled in the movie. And literally, after I finished seeing the movie, I stormed Toys R Us trying to find a Voyager Megatron. I was just like, I got to get this toy.
I found one with no problems on launch day. I feel like such a jerk.
Well, that's just it. It was just, you know, and then it was the same thing, like, after seeing the movie, then I was like, you know what, I look at Sentinel differently. I opened up my I did a review on the Ark knowing nothing about the movie, and now everyone posts comments on my YouTube video going, well, you know, those pillars are actually just a space bridge, you douche, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, I did the review before I saw the movie, but, you know, like, again, now I look at the Ark playset, and it's like, oh, you know, that little Decepticon capture chamber, if you will, that's kind of where Sentinel was.
Yeah,
that's,
it's like the lockdown room.
That's just it. And then you have the little pillar things, which is the space bridge. And, you know, then you have the place where you actually sit, I guess you could call roller or whatever. That's kind of like that little gunner station and everything.
Exactly.
It's, you know, just those little things that now it brings the toy more to life, and now you could actually picture those things in your head. Again, look, you know, there's the, you know, now we look at Ironhide, and I'm like, wow, why did they make a leader class of a guy that died?
Memorial, that's why.
I guess so.
That's how I took the Ironhide toy.
One last spin.
Yeah, like doing so many figures of New Voyager and New Leader, a Scan Series Deluxe. It's like they're giving him
Robo
one last
Fighter.
Yeah, it's our last chance, so here you go.
Robo Fighter, and then he has, oh my god, he has like there's so many of those little gimmicky ones, too.
And he died like halfway through the film, too, so I think that actually helped me get surprised by when he died, was like, I thought he was going to be like a big hero and like, you know, have a big heroic sacrifice death, but he got shot in the back.
The part of me in the marketing aspect, I say to myself, like, well, how are the kids? The kids are not going to want the guy that died.
Well, everyone who has kids has, you know, a lot of people have told stories like, yeah, I went to see the movie and my kid totally wanted to break his Sentinel Prime toy when he got home. Because Ironhide, what I understand is Ironhide was a hit with kids. A lot of kids actually really dug movie Ironhide.
Oh, because he was the weapon dude.
Yeah, you know? And so a lot of kids got apparently got wigged out when he died. Like this isn't like, you know, 86 Optimus Prime death levels, but, you know, it's a similar thing of kids going into this movie, and they're actually kind of like, you killed Ironhide, my favorite Transformer.
Oh, yeah, and it's just like that leader class toy now just takes a complete turn. And then again, like I said, for me, I picked up the leader class before the movie, but seeing the Voyager on shelves and now knowing what I know, and it's like, you know, I look at his mech tech gun that he comes with, and I'm just like, you know, you shot, you know, Ironhide with that gun, you know, it's little things like that. No, but it's true, you know, you go, that's the gun that killed Ironhide, and that's, you know, that's what I really enjoyed about it, where before the movie, you had the initial run of toys up to wave two of Voyagers, up to wave two of everything, you know, and we all bought it with what we knew and of the movie and everything and enjoyed it. But then you see the movie and then you breathe character and life and story into those toys and the ones that you haven't purchased yet, and then it intrigues you more to then go out and buy them, mm-hmm. which, you know, that's what I really liked. I mean, I'm kind of hoping that we're going to get a leader Megatron at some point.
Oh, please. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, and he needs to come with little hatchlings and a little Igor figure.
Oh, yeah.
Figure.
Like even,
oh, and yeah. Carly, Human Alliance Carly, to sit on his shoulder.
It's not only that. It's because, like, I feel that the Voyager did a really good job of doing what it had to do. Because, I'm comparing to the other, like, the way that it was handled with, obviously, with the Legion's commander, whatever, the Cyberverse one, it, you know, it has its limitations. This one does a very good job of getting that aesthetic. It, you know, now the leader class could go that one step further and even have maybe an articulated, you know, cloth kind of thing, where maybe the hood could just be pulled back, you know, which was used in the movie, where the hood was pulled back a lot and you just had the scarf waving, or any little things like that, because it would be really cool to have now finally a leader class toy that people would actually enjoy. Because I know every leader Megatron prior, I mean, I'm just speaking for myself, but a lot of people weren't too crazy about
them. They were pretty disappointing at the end of the day.
Exactly.
And
so
they are toys that those are designs that I really hope Cyberverse will make up to. You know, like they'll Cyberverse up those two Megatron designs and just do them like they did with Blackout. Cyberverse gave Blackout, finally, they gave him, you know, his updated look. It's still not perfect, but it's a lot closer to the Blackout that you might expect. And it's kind of like
the original CG plan stuff that, you know, kind of, but that's just it. So I really hope that, you know, we're going to, like, I mean, we know what's coming thus far. And we still, there's the big question mark with Dino and how they're going to handle that. I mean, my opinion personally is that I think they're going to try to make another not Ferrari, kind of like what they did with what we've seen of that leaked RPM.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever you want to call it, Speedstar, Stealth Force. Like, I think they're going to, I almost see them doing something that's more Lamborghini, mm-hmm. you know? And just calling it Dino. I mean, already the name is already confusing to people. It's Mirage, it's Dino, it's whatever. Like, if they're going to call it Mirage, they might as well stick with that Lamborghini aesthetic instead of a Ferrari aesthetic and rolling with that. And, hey, look, that's the best we could do. Ferrari's really, you know, anal about using their trademarks. So
yeah.
I mean, I know that, like, Gran Turismo, the very famous racing game, for years has wanted to use Ferrari in their games, and Ferrari's always been, nope, we don't want people being able to drive simulations of our cars.
And, know, and like, Ferrari's also got a GOG, I think, went into this last time. Ferrari, I believe, has a deal with Mattel. Barbie toys can do Ferraris, and no one else can.
Yeah, it's true. All her dream cars and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's just it. So they have some kind of deal. So it looks like if we do get a quote Dino, it's going to end up being a Mirage, and it'll just be something that's a not Ferrari. It'll be something
sideways-esque.
Like what Sideways did too, where it wasn't an Audi. You know, they had to do something to avoid that. It's the same thing like with Soundwave also, because Soundwave's a German vehicle, which is a Mercedes Benz, and I know how the Germans are already when it comes.
More toys.
So, and not to mention this is a villain character on top of that. You know, we're not trying to sell, yeah, we want to bring Bumblebee back, the kid-loving character.
The guy who executed a scientist and totally tried to kill some humans.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, so like if we couldn't convince them with Bumblebee, who was a character that even initially barely carried a gun, you know, I'm not talking movie Bumblebee, I'm talking G1 here.
Yeah, exactly.
Then to tell them, yeah, you know the villain who like killed a whole bunch of people, you know? Yeah, we want to make a toy of him with your nice German Mercedes car. It's like, yeah, no. So I imagine they're going to do something very similar that they're going to do with Mirage or Dino, where they're going to do something that's just straight up, it'll be a not Mercedes. Yeah. Or he might not get a toy at all, because it's the same thing. Like,
Soundwave's got toys coming.
Oh, does he? Okay.
He's actually got multiple toys coming. We've got confirmations.
Because it was kind of like Q, where when Q died, I said to myself, I wonder how many toys I'm going to make of that dude. Right after he died, that was like the first thing that popped in my head. I'm like, are they going to make anything of him if he just died like that?
Soundwave is even getting a Human Alliance, from what we've heard.
Oh, wow. Okay.
With Laserbeak as his partner.
Oh, that's great. All right. So, but, you know, there you go. Like, it's just a matter of... it's just a matter of seeing how they're going to go about that with the car licensing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they will hopefully be. We're probably going to see images of a lot of these toys come SDCC.
Yeah, everything was so locked down at BotCon.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
This is all going to be, I think, San Diego reveals. So,
yeah,
I mean, we'll know in about 2 weeks or so.
Or maybe TFCon.
Or maybe TFCon. I don't work at TFCon. I'm just saying. Although, you know, spoiler, I might be involved with the trivia contest. But
someone might be hosting the trivia contest and really making it interesting.
Don't know
what you're saying.
What are you talking about? But for the sake of you know, let's start winding down. I guess just first last call here for any other topics you might want to bring up. Crasis or Jared, anything left on your plate that you'd like to put on paper, as it were?
Yeah, there was one thing that kind of bugged me a lot in Revenge of the Fallen, and it's still a little bit here, was the fact that the Autobots, when they're not doing something, they would just sit in vehicle mode, completely just not doing anything at all. And they actually touch upon that in this film, where Optimus is just sitting there in truck mode. And then they actually make a gag out of it, like, oh, yeah. I've never seen him like this.
He's pouting.
This is bad. He's pouting. Yeah. So I liked that nod, but of course later in the movie you still just saw like Sideswipe sitting there for no reason, just not talking. I know it's to save on the CG budget, but I mean, come on.
It loses the characters a little bit when they're not.
Yeah, they literally are just props. Some of them.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help whenever a Transformer dies in this film, his head kind of rolls off as though he's just like an automaton that was destroyed. It's all. Someone on Twitter had a good word for it. It's very dehumanizing. And not in the jokey way of like, well, they're not humans in the first place, but that's what a Transformer is it's a very human-like robot.
Sentient.
And it's sentient. It's got freedom, because that's its right. And it is dehumanizing when, you know, in these action sequences, they come off more so as machines than as living machines. And the car thing, it definitely kind of exacerbates a little bit, because you don't have time to connect with them when they're just sitting. You don't get to see them sitting around idly doing stuff.
And not to mention, I think, to my knowledge, I'd really have to really go back and rewatch the entire movie franchise, with the exception of, say, like Barricade. You never had the cars, when they were in their alt modes, really characterizing.
Like,
I don't
acting.
Even know how to describe.
They're not doing car acting.
Yeah. Yeah, like there wasn't like, you know, I'm not expecting something like Herbie the Love Bug, you know, where the car would like, his shocks would go up and down as he's trying to kind of talk. But it's just like. Like, with the exception of Barricade, who really was like, you know, hey, this car is alive. The other ones, the cars only drove.
Yeah, or
in general,
idled.
In all the movies, which was kind of a shame, where they only would actually show any kind of, that this was a living creature that had its own thoughts and everything, was when it transformed. All of a sudden, now here's some kind of acting or anything. Because to my knowledge, I'd really have to go back and now with a fine tooth and comb and go, did any characters ever talk while in alt mode? Or did any characters ever, with the exception of Bumblebee, of course, but that's kind of a unique situation. With the exception of Barricade, who's, you know, he did the whole revving and trying to run over Sam. But did any characters ever, like, you know, show some kind of life? Because I remember even at the beginning of Revenge of the Fallen, it's like, there's Ironhide, he strolls in Ironhide. You know, you have Josh Duhamel's character, tap him twice on the hood, hey, how you doing, Ironhide? No reaction. Then he transforms, boom, now he's acting, I smelled him.
Yeah.
You know? He didn't talk when, like, it's just, it's almost like, it's like, now you could talk, you're transformed. And, like, it's kind of weird that it's missing from that. You know,
yeah, like, it's definitely a factor, I think, that dehumanizes the character of them, because it's like they can't even emote unless they are in robot form.
When they're a movie prop, they're stuck. When they're CG, they're okay. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how to describe it, but that's kind of what it was. You know,
no, it's exactly. Like, that's been a problem with me since Revenge of the Fallen, in particular. They did that a lot in that movie, and then they started doing it even in this movie.
Well, even in the first movie, when Bumblebee gets his legs blown off, Jazz is sitting right there.
Yeah, in vehicle mode.
Vehicle mode. Yep. And he does not move. He backs up when Lennox tells him to back off, or somebody does. But he doesn't do anything. In the first movie, there is a bit when the Decepticons get summoned by Megatron. They all talk in Cybertronian for a bit.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I loved about the prequel novel for Revenge of the Fallen, The Veiled Threat. There's some nifty bits with toy-only characters, Knockout and Longarm, that had a long conversation in vehicle mode, and it mentioned how they sort of wiggled on their axles or whatever while they were talking. And
yeah, exactly.
It was a neat little bit.
That shows some kind of life, that they're not just, you know, an audio box like Kit or something. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that shows that there's more life. Because, again, that's something that's been done in pretty much every single continuity that it could be shown. So pretty much animation. You know, like car robots or robots in disguise. They've always tried to make some kind of point that they're alive when they're in that other mode, too. You know, it's robots in disguise. And when they're in disguise, they're still living, breathing, you know, moving in the, you know, individuals. Again, like, people going to say, oh, well, you know, Laserbeak's alt mode is the bird, right? So he was alive in that, and he was talking. No, you know what I mean. The cars. That's what I'm, like, I guess I'm gonna go back and try to find maybe the one scene or something. But to my knowledge,
I agree. That's, especially when you guys cited from the first movie, that bit with Jazz just chilling out in vehicle mode while, you know, Bumblebee's getting massacred. It definitely, that was a disconnect for the humanization of the Transformers, where you're kind of like, you know, Jazz didn't even react. He didn't go like, oh no, Bumblebee! He's kind of sat there, because it feels like their vocal cords are literally, like, removed or, like, disconnected when they're in vehicle mode, which is odd. Because, I mean, that's kind of part of the franchise, that these guys at times are just vehicles talking to each other. I mean, look at Prime. Look at when RC in bike mode talks in Transformers Prime. Like her axle tilts.
Any of them. Yeah, that's just that there's some kind of indication of vocal speech, you know, whether it be a light blinking or a shock going up and down, just something that shows that they're alive instead of it just being a static vehicle that could just go into gear and drive and not go into gear, you know?
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, should future movies happen, he says naively, because they totally will. I'm hoping that one of the teething problems that, like, I call these first three movies, these are teething. Like, you know, this is one of the, I think this may be the first toy-based franchise more than anything else to get this level of movie coverage. And much like comic book movies, there's going to be a teething period. I think we are in the teething period.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm hoping that one thing that'll come out of these movies is that, you know, whoever does the next bunch will look at these and say, like, hey, what was one thing that those movies didn't really get around to doing? Humanizing the robots. Let's keep that in mind.
If the rumors are true and Spielberg wants to kind of take the helm more in this, then we will definitely get something like that, because that's definitely his style. That's the very E.T., you know, alien and boy kind of thing, where I think they'll definitely, if anything, see, that's the part where I'm a little scared now too, where, you know, people were like joking with me, oh, you know, the Ferrari's going to be Rodimus. I look now, and now I kind of hoped that the Ferrari was Rodimus, because if they do another three movies after this teething period, and they'll do it like, okay, well, we're going to retire Prime and all that, we're going to have a new cast of characters, and maybe it's, you know, Shia's not going to come back, so they'll have to have, like, Shia's son or whatever. Oh my God, if they do a Bumblebee, now it's Rodimus thing. You know, like, now Rodimus will be the main focus or something, or they'll do a new generation, or who knows? Like, they might do these movies in 5 years from now. They might do it in 3 years from now, because, like, what was the cooling period from X-Men 3 to Wolverine?
Oh,
can anyone tell me that?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but you know what? But there you go. It's just like, maybe that was 4 years or 5 years, but it's just, there was that cooling period where you had a franchise that was really hot, made a lot of money, three movies, and then, all right, let's chill. And then we're going to do some other stuff. And then we had X-Men, and then we had First Class, and who knows what's going to come from that, the Wolverine Origins 2 or whatever. You know, they want to do those Avengers movies too. But anyways, it's just, you know, there's going to be that cooling period now, which is kind of good too, because I think that Hasbro then will put more focus on video games, animation, you know, now that they got the hub.
I really hope that whoever looks at the next movies also takes a look at whatever the media was during the films, primarily Transformers Prime, since it's you know, dark in a way that can kind of synchronize aesthetically with the live action films.
I
really hope that, you know, someone looks at it and even just pulls out little things like, hey, did you notice how, you know, when RC's in bike mode and talks, her front axle tilts slightly in time with her mood and stuff like that. Like, maybe we should incorporate those bits and pieces in to enhance the robots in this film. I think it's going to be really interesting whenever the movies pick up again, as they inevitably will, to have been around for that teething period and to enter into whatever the next era is. It'll be really neat to watch, because it just makes me think of, you know, you look at comic book movies, you've got Batman in 89 and you got Superman from back then as well. Those two were excellent films, but they were also almost freak occurrences, because, you know, everything kind of took a bit of a downturn after that. And I think that downturn period is what to look at as a parallel right now. Like, you know, on the worst end of things, look at stuff like the Fantastic Four film franchise. You look at stuff like, you know, 90s movies, like the 90s Captain America, like stuff that just didn't really get how to tie its material to the film style. And then I just think to myself, like, this is kind of an enhanced version of that, where it's not nearly as bad as, you know, the Reb Brown Captain America or anything like that. But, you know, we're moving through that period where eventually we're going to hit that epiphany that happened with stuff like Hellboy, where execs will go like, well, now that those movies have been done for a while, we know they can be done. Now we feel safe funding something that will push outside of the very narrow box they've been allowed to operate in.
Yeah, well, that's just it. And now that we've pretty much done, you know, we got the three movies under our belt and now it's all said and done, who knows where they could go from there? You know, it seems like how it works now with a lot of these things is you have the three big movies and then you do something that kind of spins off from the norm.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have your three Lord of the Rings and then there was the talk of doing The Hobbit. You'll have your three X-Men and then you have the Wolverine origin movies. You have your three Spider-Mans and then the talk of a reboot. You'll have your three whatevers and then you could do, now it's like you've done those three core movies. Now you could do something that's different, like three Shreks and then the Puss in Boots movie, I guess you could use that as an example. You know, where, so if they wanted to, dare I say, do a Bumblebee movie, maybe some people would groan at that idea, but if they wanted to, now would be the time. Where if they wanted to just do a whole movie of Bumblebee's adventures or whatever, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they went that angle, because now's the time that they do it. You know,
well, I'm sure a lot of investors are also looking to see how Pirates 4 did, because Pirates 4, I think, was a real breaker of the established order of things, because Pirates had a trilogy and rather than do a spinoff movie, they just said, no, let's just take most of the cast of Pirates and just do another pirate story. And for better or for worse, but still it did break a boundary.
Make money like crazy, those movies.
Mm-hmm.
So they make a lot of money, those movies, one way or another.
Exactly.
That also kind of ties into like the Harry Potter movies, where those they're not trilogies. They're just, let's just do it until the story's done. Or if even Twilight, dare I say, but stuff like that.
Well,
just
so long as we don't end up with Transformers 3-2 or anything like Harry Potter's doing.
Yeah. Well, my question is, where do you go now? Megatron's dead.
Well,
Sentinel's dead. Like, all the major threats are dead. So
that's just it. Like, whatever. Like, Bay always said he didn't want to do this. He didn't want to do Dinobots. He didn't want to do that. Well, I get a feeling, and Bay has said it himself, he's not going to be a factor in the future. So if they want to open up to bigger things with Dinobots and, you know, Unicron or whatever, whoever that next director is, as long as Hasbro says, okay, let's go with it, it's one great way to come back, you know? Or they could even do a whole movie where there's a small threat, but at the end of it, it leads to Unicron, which then could open up to movies like movie 5,
but,
you know?
You know who I'm pushing for, and I'm all alone in this probably. I know I'm not, but I'm, you know, I'm a quiet voice in this crowd, but I'm just pushing for, give me a movie with Flatline as the villain. Let's just do the Flatline movie.
Okay.
Flatline being the villainous, crazy Decepticon medic from Spotlight RC. He's still out there. He never died.
By Mr. Alex Milne.
Exactly. Let's have Flatline and Thundercracker. Let's just do that. I mean, they're antagonists who have survived to this point. So let's run with them.
Well, that's the thing where you are right. Like, there's not much left that the Autobots could fight against. So they could create a new villain or create, you know, a new dark god, or they could dip more into the mythology. I remember how, again, another thing that was talked about with Dark of the Moon initially, which didn't pan out in the end, was they were talking about how they were dipping more into the mythology, which was kind of incorrect, but I guess it was more they were creating mythology instead of dipping into it.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of things that were said at the beginning. The good thing was, I remember after seeing the movie, I went on to onto the forums and kind of looking at old stuff and what was said prior to the movie coming out, you know, just like rumors and everything, and seeing stuff like, again, when I mentioned, oh, what happened to James Avery being Silverbolt?
Yeah.
Like, that James Avery being Silverbolt was one of the first pieces of news of voice actors announced. Like, he was like one of the first voices that was confirmed for the movie. And then in the end, he just wasn't even a factor at all in the movie at all. So it's one of those things where I went back and I'm like, okay, here's all this stuff about Junkion that didn't pan out, all this, all that, everything. And so now wondering, like, where do they want to go from there and what will actually happen?
It's interesting actually thinking back on that pre-production stuff when,
oh yeah,
we were all under the assumption like, oh, this movie's primarily going to take place out in space. It's barely even going to be on Earth. And then the crux of the movie is the complete obliteration of Chicago.
Oh yeah, of course. Where there, you know, the space thing only went as far as the moon.
Yeah.
You know, where, and so it stayed even in our own atmosphere, where in the case of, you know, at least Revenge of the Fallen, they went as far as Mars, you know,
yeah.
So, like, there's, again, like, you know what it is in the end? I watched all three movies after, like, I watched the first two again, just to, like, get the final feeling, and I think that when I have my final answer when it comes, which was your favorite, I think that the first one and the third one have aspects of each other that make me fight over that decision. The thing that the third one didn't have that the first one has was the first one had that arrival of the Autobot scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And that scene is so, I'll never forget sitting in the theater when I saw that scene. Like, I'll sound like a bitch, but I got a little choked up because it was just, I felt like we finally gone full circle. But that's like, that was me worrying that the movie was going to suck.
Oh, that was, I mean, I was at BotCon 07 when we saw that scene, and that scene was the moment for that crowd,
that
I think, of all the moments
we
had.
We did it.
Yeah, that was where, when they had Optimus Prime drive up, transform, have the other Autobots transform around him, and they say, "We are the Autobots." You're kind of like, God damn, we're here.
Yeah, later. But that's just it. And so that's the only thing that is really missing from the third movie, is that there wasn't that one scene that really pulled you in and said, like if that's the thing that the first movie really had, was it really had that one hello emotional scene that the third movie didn't. The third movie had a lot of great, like, twists and turns, and, like, it's a great movie to show to someone who loves Transformers but doesn't know about all the spoilers. It's fun for that, and that's what made the movie fun for me, and why I enjoy it a lot, because it has a bunch of emotional reactions. But that's where, like, again, Revenge of the Fallen is the one that's going to fall behind. The only other testing point was after I left this movie, people were like, do you really like it? And I'm like, the test is going to be, can I watch it again?
Yeah, well, I can say from my own vantage, I saw it twice in 48 hours, and I didn't feel bored the second time.
Yeah,
well, so I was like, this is the ultimate test of this movie for me. I'm seeing it two nights in a row.
I saw movie one. Well, I saw movie one, I think, like five times in theaters with different groups of friends and stuff, and even family. It's like, you know, that was the beauty of it. It's like, now it's a live action movie. My mother could watch it, and she, you know, like, it's almost like there's that excuse. Now that it's a live action movie, it's okay for my mother to sit down and watch a Transformer, anything.
Yeah.
Or a girl, you know, that was always that mentality. So, you know, but with the other ones where it was like Revenge of the Fallen, I watched it the first time. I saw it the second time in IMAX. When I rented that DVD, it felt strained.
Yeah, well, I've never seen Revenge of the Fallen a second time. I've tried, and I've always gotten really bored.
And so this one, it was the same thing. I saw it the first time. I saw it the second time again in 3D because I wanted to just make sure I didn't miss anything that I didn't miss the first time, now knowing with Sentinel. I haven't seen it a third time yet, but I get a feeling, and I do want to see it a third time in non-3D, I get a feeling it because it's a very cool watch. That's what I liked about it. The pace was good. It was. One's pace, I think, has the best pace in terms of you could watch it beginning to end, and it goes good. Where this one, I think I have to see it one more time before I can make that decision.
Let me bounce this around the room for a sec. Like, Jared or Krasis, how do you guys feel about the film as far as, like, repeat viewings? Like especially compared to previous films, do you feel this one is going to hold up in the long term for you, or...?
I have only seen it once so far, but I think it will. I did not feel... I think technically this is the longest one of the three. It's just a few minutes longer than the other ones. And it did not feel like 2.5 hours to me.
Didn't feel as long as Revenge of the Fallen did. That's
No. No, it did not.
That's for sure.
No, I think it'll be a good repeat viewing. I'm with Proto Man that it's fighting with the first one for best of the three. I think so far I give this one the edge as best of the three, but yeah, I've only seen it.
It needs that repeat viewings because, like, that's the thing. Movie one, I was able to watch it multiple times, and it fluidly just went. It was able to go from beginning to end nicely. Where Revenge of the Fallen, forget about it. Let's not even talk about it because of its pace. But this one, I saw it once, I saw it twice, but I saw it twice again with like I had a monocle up to my eye, just like going through every scene. That was kind of like the second time I went to see it was because also of all the stuff that I had to now look out for. So the third time, let's see if I could, you know, I'm going to see it in 2D. I'm going to be able to enjoy it now without the dim and the 3D. And I'm going to see if I'll enjoy it, if the pace is good, if the cuts are bad, if there's something that's annoying, if this scene is too long, you know.
Yeah.
I think actually, for the few people that were actually able to see, and it sucks because it never got released in mass media, was the IMAX cut of the 2007 movie that had the extra scenes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, like, for the people who saw it, that is a horrible cut of the movie.
Oh,
that
it's terrible.
That is like, there's a reason why those scenes got cut, because it ruins the pace completely.
And I was suckered into it. I went to see it because of the, oh, there's new scenes.
Yeah,
so,
like, new robot scenes. That's what we all wanted because of the limit of robot scenes.
And then we realized, like, wait, why would they cut robot scenes if they were that expensive to make?
Yeah, yep. Exactly. It's like, no, it's angry black chick, and it's, you know, hey, I'm washing my dog, and hey, your car is really bad, you know, like, all the scenes that just kind of, like, it was an extra scene that should have been cut to begin with because it upsets the pace, and here it is now in the big screen upsetting the pace, so,
yep. Yeah.
And I paid a couple of dollars more to see it this way, so.
Well, Krasis, what about you, like, just to get your input on a repeat viewing?
Yeah. I need to see it again. I've only seen it once, and it was that one time, and it was in that glorious IMAX 3D. So at the moment, I can easily say it was the best of the three for me. Because of the experience, I think, yeah. I mean, also, what helped, too, is I saw it in a big, really rowdy New York crowd. So it really felt like, I'm not a big sports guy, but it felt like I finally understand now when people get really nuts at a sporting event. Because that's what it felt like to me. This was my Super Bowl, and everyone around me had the same vibe. We were all screaming and cheering, and it was crazy.
You're not on board with those gentlemen out there who get really mad about cheering in theaters, then, I'm guessing.
Well, I'm usually kind of fairly quiet in a movie, but when everyone else is screaming and hooting and hollering, I figured, what the hell, I'm at a concert now. You know, so it was... It was a lot of fun, and I think I'm still coming off that high, so I do need to see it again for a more subjective, really, you know, this time really concentrate on it, this time I won't be totally shocked and blown away by Ironhide dying, and Sentinel changing, and Megatron dying in the way he did. There were so many things that actually made my jaw drop in the film. Mm-hmm. So I'd say as far as that was the only of the Bay movies that was that effective. Other than, as Proto Man was saying, that Autobot arrival scene in the first movie. I mean, even now, if my iPod just kind of like accidentally goes to that track on random, I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I'm immediately taken back to that.
I remember.
It's like a teary-eyed scene. It really is. It was amazing. So I kind of agree where it's somewhere between 1 and 3. Right now, I'm leaning more towards 3. And I doubt I'll watch 2 very much at all. I still never unwrapped my Blu-ray. copy. So
oh, really,
yeah.
What, you know, Chu has some great CG moments I love, and I've rewatched several. Like I always love watching Devastator for, like combine. That's still one of my favorite sure. moments in that film. But the actual film itself, I still can't just go beginning to end on it because I'm just like, there's so much muck in this. That it's just, you know, it's such a muddy film that's tripping over itself. I just want to get to the parts I like. And now that I have a DVD of it, I am free to do that. Fast forward. And then I'm like, crap, I just ruined another viewing of Revenge of the Fallen. Oh, well. just also throw in my own viewpoint. I am still liking Dark of the Moon the most only because I love the first movie as well. But Dark of the Moon to me, it has a lot of what I loved of the first movie without having to wait for the origin stuff to be told. Because I'm an impatient moviegoer, so I kind of like that Dark of the Moon is able to sort of just cut to the chase and have robots start fighting. but that's my viewpoint right now. Like you guys reminded me though that to this day I still adore that Autobot arrival scene. So
that was the piece of soundtrack footage we all hunted for. I'm telling you.
Yes. Yeah. That's what we all, you know, not that I'm saying you should do this, and you certainly shouldn't discuss it on the forums, because you will get a one-week ban if you do, because there's a giant sticky topic on every board saying this, but that's why we all hunted down bootlegs of the 07 movie as soon as we got home from BotCon, because we were all like, we've got to see that again. Got to see that again. anyway,
There are a couple of things that I worry may bother me on repeat viewings, and we'll just have to see, but they kind of hamper the pacing a little bit, and that's the job hunt scenes, I think, went on a little bit too long.
Absolutely. I would, if I were going to trim something out, I would trim the entire interview process that wasn't John Malkovich.
Yeah. And the parent scenes. They were great in the first movie, but a waste in the second movie, and really didn't add much to this movie either, I gotta say.
I mean, especially when Ironhide dies. It's a horrible scene. You're coming off that oh my god factor, and then right. You immediately cut to the parents.
Right.
I'm like, are you serious? That's my biggest flaw with that movie, I swear, right? When they cut from that moment to Sam. I'm like, yeah. No.
I did like her in her opening bit, though, when she dropped the line about Bumblebee resembling that car if Bumblebee was like a sorry sack of et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that was great.
That was a great line, and I will always give her credit for that. But yeah, people are a little bit divided on that one, but I did feel it was a real tonal, like, not just shift, it was tonal whiplash to jump back to them. I mean, on the bright side, it did explain what, you know, where they, at least they got a minor explanation of where they went, because he's like, leave the city. And it's like, okay, I guess they're leaving. So that kind of explains where they've gone. But I was thinking at this point, maybe this would be a good time with us hitting the 2.5 hour mark, to just go through our, you know, your overall thoughts. And if you are into it, your score of the film, numerical or star or, you know, how many puppies it's worth or whatever you like. So just to go around the table, just your final thoughts and if you like your ranking. So let's start off with Mr. Krasis.
I would say, like I said, for me, best of the trilogy. I still can't give these movies a perfect score by any means. And so I don't know. At its heart, it's still a Michael Bay film with really awesome graphics, amazing action scenes, but so many plot holes, so many little weird quirks, and I still don't think he understands quite that Transformers are sentient beings that actually can emote and have personalities. We get little glimpses of it throughout all three movies, and it's always that little tease where you're like, we're not going to go there now. We're going to pretend that that's just a car. So that's always been kind of a bothersome thing with all three of these movies. So I'd say for me, for this movie, Dark of the Moon, as a score, I'd probably give it maybe a 6.5 or 7.
Oosh.
As a film. But as in, if you're rating them as far as the trilogy, I would say it's easily the best.
Hmm. All right. And Jared, how about yourself?
Yeah, like I said before, you know, I think it edges out after one viewing. It edges out the first one as the best of the three. I think I have a problem where I can sit in front of just about any Michael Bay movie, and while I'm watching it, the visual crack totally overwhelms me, and I can be entertained by any of them, even Revenge of the Fallen, heck, even Bad Boys 2 in some parts. And while I'm sitting there watching it, I enjoy it, and then when I sit there afterwards and start to think about it, I'm like, wow, that sucked, and this sucked, and this sucked. This one, there are still parts where I can do that, but there aren't aren't nearly as many as with Revenge of the Fallen, and probably even fewer than with the first one. So I give it 37 transforming cogs, but I don't really know what that's out of. So there you go.
That's all right. You know, you know what? Fractions are for the math nerds to figure out, and we aren't the math
nerds.
Right. So
yeah,
no, I leave that up to the listeners, and I leave that up to the math nerd listeners to figure that out. I mean that in a non-derogatory way. Proto Man, how about yourself? Final thoughts and maybe a score?
I gave the original movie, I gave it like an 8 out of 10 because it was really enjoyable. I mean, if the only loses those 2 points because it didn't have enough robots, but it was an enjoyable movie. You know, like this is why – this was the one that kickstarted everything for everybody, even the casual non-Transformer fans.
Yeah.
It was a good movie. Revenge of the Fallen, I gave it like a 5. It wasn't even a pass. It has Transformers. It has scenes, like you said, that you could fast forward to and enjoy. But as a movie as a whole, it's a fail, so it's a 5, you know. But there is fun stuff in it, just it's done in clips. This one – it also gets an 8. It's tied with the 8. It's a movie that's enjoyable. It has a good pace. I think I have to see it more before I could finalize that score, but I give it an 8 out of 10. And 86 movie, it's still unrivaled in my opinion. But it's not a nostalgia goggles 80, you know, 86 bias or anything. It's more no, that
you were, there's a lot 86, of us, a lot of us in the fandom who are this heavy in the fandom. We have seen the 86 movie sometime in the last like 3 years. Most of us.
Oh, so. I've seen it like 3 times in the last year. It always comes up at some point in my life. Or it has to be rewatched again. It was the same thing because I remember when I left the 2007 movie and people asked me, did you like this more than the original 86? I said the 86 movie was so grand. So much happens in it from so many different angles that you can't even compare the two. You know, it's apples and oranges. And not even a matter of live action to animation. It's just that there's so much more that happens in the 86 movie in an hour and 45 minutes compared to that 2.5 or 2 hours of the 2007 movie that you can't even compare it. But this one, it's 8 out of 10, Dark of the Moon.
Well, I was going to say, like, with the 86 movie, it's such an odd perspective for a lot of us to come at it when we've been in the fandom for this long, because a lot of us who are really hard in the fandom, we not only have seen the 86 movie a lot more recently than some folks who are remembering it from their childhood have, but a lot of us have seen it so many times that our perception of the 86 movie has completely changed in how we can look at it, because some of us, you know, we've seen it in upwards of 20, 50, 60 times in our lifetime. Yep. Once you've seen a movie that many times, you aren't even looking at it from through the same eyepieces that you're looking at a movie you've seen this year. Because, you know, the 86 movie, it's a lot less about being a film for a lot of us now. It's a lot more about it's part of Transformers history, and we know all this stuff about it. Did you know this? Did you know Nelson Shin? Blah, blah, blah. And the comparison is just so hard to make, I think.
It's a movie I turn on in the background, and I say the lines along with it while I'm doing things around the house or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of the few movies where I can pretty much recite the entire film from memory. So
yeah,
it's very hard for me to actually be subjective on that one, since it's such a nostalgia bug for me.
Exactly. And it's both a nostalgia bug, and you've watched it a bunch recently. So it's like it's just such a strange beast to try to move into the same realm as the live action films, you know, and aside from even having completely different intents as well, live action films kickstarting and maintaining almost a separate franchise, while the 86 movie was trying to update and move along the toy line side of another franchise, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's a really weird comparison to make. And I always feel bad bringing that, because I always end up sounding like I'm talking down to people who are not the crazies who watch the 86 movie that many times. I tell you, I am not. I'm just saying, there are different perspectives with these kind of things, and it's always gonna skew stuff in a certain way. Myself, I still hate doing numerical scores, so I don't really want to do one. But I think last time we did this, I said like if I really had to on a 10 scale, maybe, or if someone actually made me do the 10 scale, which I really hate, I might say like 6 or 7. I'd much rather do the 5 scale, where I'd say it was definitely a solid 3, maybe 3 or 4, depending how I feel. Dark of the Moon. I think as far as WTF and TFW is concerned, we've really covered the bulk of it for what we're going to do. Hopefully this recording has been just as helpful to you, at least in terms of getting some movie chatter where we're pretty even handed about what we're talking about. I want to give some props to Crisis Empire, Jared, and Proto Man for maintaining the WTF standard of We're going to talk about the film. We're not going to flip out, and we'll insult a whole bunch of people who have nothing to do with the film while we're doing so. So, good.
Flipping out isn't high end.
Exactly.
No. So, we flip things on eBay. We don't flip out.
Oh, good Lord.
That was terrible.
That was.
Oh.
I thought mine was bad.
Oh, man. Thank you, gentlemen of that podcast.
You forgot our name again, didn't you? Admit it. Admit it.
No way. I always listen to The Empire Toys Back. What? Palpatine's Plush Corner. Crasis and Empire love Stormtroopers. It's pre-order 66. You'll hear these gentlemen on there talking about high-end toys, like high-end gentlemen do. Protoman, you'll hear on Canadian Slag. You'll hear him at TFCon. You'll see him all over the boards. He is a Canadian Cybertron CA. You know how it is. Thank you for tuning in. We'll talk to you later. And that was WTFTFW, Dark of the Moon, Alpha. And we will kill them all.
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.